This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everyone, I have a confession to make. You know, I got to tell you, in my whole life of watching news, paying attention to the news, being a student of the media, I've never really cared at all about Katie Couric. I didn't really care about that much, care about her that much when she was on the Today Show. I didn't care about her that much when she was the anchor of the CBS Evening News. Didn't care about her much when she had her own talk show, which I think she did, or when she was on Yahoo. I didn't think about her. I remember she was on, sometimes she would do a segment interviewing somebody or doing a story about something or someone I was interested in, and maybe I'd watch it. Okay. And then I went about my day. I have to tell you, the coverage that this Katie Couric book is getting is absolutely intriguing to me. I've never cared about Katie Couric in my life until the avalanche of stories about everything that's in her book. It's now gotten to the point where I catch myself. It's like Pavlov's dog. My whole life, I've never cared a word about Katie Couric. I have nothing against her, but if she was, sitting right next to me on an airplane, I wouldn't say anything. I'd take that hour flight or 3-hour flight, whatever it was, and sleep the whole time. Now, I'm at the point where if I see a headline that has Katie Couric in it, I now can't help myself. But I have to read. I am following this drama, this soap opera, more closely than anyone. So today I did something that I haven't done in a long time. I watched the interview that Katie Couric did on Tuesday morning on the Today Show. I didn't stay up and watch it live. I watched the clips online. From what I understand, I think she was on the show twice. I think she was on the standard Today Show with Savannah Guthrie, and then she was on something called Third Hour Today, which I think is sort of a lighter version of the Today Show where she's interviewed by Al Roker and two other people that I didn't know. But see, now I know of all these things. I'm becoming a Today Show expert as part of my obsession with all things related to Katie Couric's book. Also, I don't see how I don't buy this book now. I'm going to have to buy this book because I am so into the stories that she's telling in this book and her reaction to the stories and other people's reaction to the stories. So I watched these two Katie Couric interviews that she did on the Today Show yesterday. And I came to a number of conclusions in watching these interviews. One, I can't believe anyone watches this show. This has got to be the worst freaking show in the world, the Today Show, especially this Third Hour Today Show. It's so corny and so syrupy. I mean, I guess this is what works in morning TV. I guess this is what they think people want. Maybe some of you that watch morning TV are into this. I think it's the stupidest thing in the world. I'm watching this interview of Al Roker and these other two people interview Katie Couric, and it just I felt like they were talking to a 9-year-old. I feel like it's almost insulting to my intelligence, the fact that they have to act like they're such cartoon characters. I found it so annoying. And then I realized why I've paid such little attention to Katie Couric's career over the course of the last 30 years. Two is, there were a lot of reports after all these, and if you haven't been following the drama of Katie Couric's book, I envy you because you have not been down the same rabbit hole that I am. But there were all these stories that her publisher had pressured her to put all these negative things in there. And she has negative things in there about everybody, about Ashley Banfield, about Larry King. There's negative things in there about people she worked with, Matt Lauer. There's negative things in there about everybody she's ever met, from what I can understand. And I think Page Six had reported, she was only doing that because the publisher told her it would sell books, and now she regrets it. But I got to say, in this interview, or these two interviews, she owned this book. She didn't say, I didn't really write that, or, somebody slipped things in there. She owned this book. She said she was proud of it. She said she felt like it was giving birth. And it was interesting to me when she talked about why she chose to write this book. She went on and on about this love story that she had with her husband, who unfortunately passed away. She went on and on about how she wants her children to know the story of her relationship with her husband. And then she went on and said, well, you know, I learned so many life lessons, and maybe there's some lessons that other people can learn in this. And she talked about how she's been a witness to history. She's been in the company of presidents and first ladies and world leaders and this and that. And she felt the need to record that once and for all. It was interesting. There was no discussion when she talked about the rationale for why she wrote this book. There was no discussion at all about settling scores. And again, I haven't read the book yet. I've now just read a bunch of articles about the book and seen a bunch of, seen a bunch of interviews relating to the book. But there was no discussion at all of settling scores. And to me, based on what I can tell, not having read the book yet, and I, that's a specious place to be, making comments about a book that you haven't read, but that's exactly where I am. It's clear to me that she wants to settle some scores, and that's why she is airing all this public dirty laundry. It's also clear to me she wants to make money with this book. She wants this book to be a bestseller, and I have no doubt with all the publicity that it's gotten, she will. The only again, I haven't read the book yet, but the only thing I haven't seen in the book is a whole bunch of negative things about Donald Trump. And if she really wanted to make this a bestseller, she would have thrown something crazy in there about Donald Trump as well. Then the other thing that she said in the second Today Show interview she did was she was taken out of context. A lot of the stories about all the controversial aspects of this book that are in there that have been in the news, that they're taken out of context. And she said that maybe they're doing these sensationalistic stories in order to get clicks. And I have to tell you, that struck a chord with me. And I said, well, hey, maybe I'm guilty of this. Maybe I'm somebody that's kind of just playing into the narrative here that these news organizations are creating because they want to get clicks. And I'm as guilty as anybody. I'm clicking on all these stories to read what Katie Couric had to say to everybody. And I've never thought about Katie Couric once in my life. So, and that only kind of fed into my desire to try and read this book now. The other thing that struck me in watching this interview, and if you want to comment on it, if you saw it, you can call in at 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. The other thing that struck me is that I really need to do a better job keeping a journal. Because I used to be very meticulous with my journal keeping, but now I got out of that habit maybe about a year or so ago, maybe a little more than a year ago, because I would use my wife as a sounding board for all the kind of random thoughts and the random recollections of my day and the kind of rabbit hole that I would go down with my thoughts. I would use my wife for that. So there was less of a need for me to put that externally somewhere else. Also, as you can tell, if you listen to this show, I'm a pretty open book. I share with you almost everything that I do on a daily basis, to the point of being boring sometimes. So I think that part of the reason I haven't felt much of a need to keep a journal is that I use you as my journal by telling you what's going on. Katie Couric, no doubt about the fact that she kept such great notes, and she kept all her old flashcards, and she kept all sorts of personal correspondences that definitely helped her write this book. So in case I ever become really well known one day, I'm thinking maybe I should keep a journal so that I can go back to keeping a journal, I should say, so that I can have the same ability to write my memoirs as Katie Couric has here, because she really apparently does a very good job delving into all sorts of other things. Now, the thing about the one interview that she did that just drove me up the wall is she's being interviewed by the two people that are in Al Roker, and she's talking about her decision to leave the Today Show and go to the CBS Evening News. And in some ways, this harkens back to the conversation I was having with Dominic Carter 13 minutes ago. She essentially blamed sexism for why she failed as the anchor of the CBS Evening News. I have to tell you, I am so fed up with people blaming racism and sexism for why they haven't succeeded. Now, is there an element of truth to what she's saying? Now, Al Roker jumps in. He says, you mean sexism from people at CBS. She says, yeah, but maybe even just more broadly from the audience as a whole. Now, I thought that was the biggest load of BS I'd heard in forever. She's saying essentially that television audiences are sexist, and that's why no one watched her in the CBS Evening News. Now, why were television audiences not sexist in the morning when she was doing well at the Today Show? Now, there's all sorts of reasons why she might not have done as well in the ratings. Maybe because the competition on the other networks was very good. Maybe because her sort of cheerful, sunny, fake America's sweetheart persona doesn't play as well at night as it does in the morning. Maybe it's for a whole host of reasons. But to say that it's sexism, come on. That dog don't hunt, in my judgment. So I found that really irksome that she was blaming sexism for her failure there. And then in her interview with Savannah Guthrie, I gave Savannah Guthrie credit for bringing up the Matt Lauer issue. Now, if you're not up on this, Matt Lauer was one of the early victims. I don't want to call him a victim. He was one of the early people outed as a Me Too-er, right? He was Me Too-ing everybody. He was Me Too-ing all over the place. He was Me Too-ing so often, he was Me Squared, right? He was Me Cubed. So he was very apparently predatory towards women, including women who worked at NBC. And I gave Savannah Guthrie credit for bringing this up with Katie Couric. This is what she said.
It took me a long time to process what was going on, because the side of Matt I knew was the side of Matt I think you all knew. He was kind and generous and considerate, a good colleague. And, you know, as I got more information and learned what was going on behind the scenes, it was really upsetting and disturbing. And I think then I did some of my own reporting. I talked to people. I really tried to excavate what had been going on. And, you know, it was really devastating, but also disgusting. And, you know, I think what I realized is there was a side of Matt I never really knew. And I tried to understand why he behaved the way he did and why he was so reckless and callous and honestly abusive to other women.
And so then Savannah Guthrie asks him, well, what's the nature of your relationship like with him now? And this is someone who, even once all this stuff came out, the text messages are in the book. She says, I love you, you're a friend forever, and this and that. And she essentially tells Savannah Guthrie that they don't have a relationship now. They have no more relationship now. And it struck me, that whole discussion, as pretty disingenuous. Not on Savannah Guthrie's part, but on the part of Katie Couric. It looked to me like Katie Couric knew she got a lot of flack for painting a rosy picture of their relationship, meaning her and Matt Lauer. And now, because Matt Lauer is persona non grata in all areas of polite society, now Katie Couric feels the need to join the collection of people throwing him under the bus. I would have had more respect for Katie Couric had she said, look, everything I've read about what Matt Lauer did here, I think it's terrible. If there's truth to it, and I'll assume there is, that's reprehensible conduct. But number one, I never saw that side of Matt Lauer, and I really think that that's out of character from the Matt Lauer that I knew. I mean, it's kind of the love the sinner, hate the sin mentality. I wish she would have shown, I mean, if she did feel this kind of fondness for Matt Lauer, I wish she would have shown a little bit of that I don't know, that warmth, that sympathy which she seemingly had with Matt Lauer at the time this scandal broke, I wish she would have shown that in that interview. Instead, it seemed to me that she was playing to the politically correct cheap seats and kind of throwing gasoline on the Matt Lauer fire. So that was my take in watching the Katie Couric interview. 800-848-9222. But now I do want to get the book. Again, if you would have said to me a year ago, there's going to be a memoir by Katie Couric, I would have said, what do I care about Katie Couric? But I now do want to see if what's in here really is taken out of context. And I want to see some of these other things that she said. And again, I disapprove of a lot of the things she said about people like Larry King and others and the way in which she said them. But I do kind of want to read the book now. And look, I'm way behind in my reading list already. Give me your take on this drama surrounding the Katie Couric book release. And if you've seen the interview, what you think about her discussion and her defense of some of the things that's in that book, including one of the things we didn't play was her discussion of why she edited the Ruth Bader Ginsburg interview. To me, I gave Savannah Guthrie credit for bringing that up as well. Katie Couric gave a pretty weak answer on that one as well. Tell me what you think. 800-848-9222. BJ is in Queens. Hello, BJ.
Hey, how's it going there, Frank? You know, this is a non-book from a non-journalist who's trying to make a non-event an event. And what really sours this whole thing for me is the fact that, not that I give too much thought of it anyway, but she worked with this guy Lauer for over 20 years, I guess, something like that.
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy had a buzzer in his door where he trapped the women that he wanted to trap in the door and not let them go. She knew nothing of this, heard no scuttlebutt, no nothing, you know. And she sells this baloney, and there's nothing in here that's redeeming. Why anyone would want to read this story and say, you know, I mean, I could see a young woman saying, I'd like to read this story, and, you know, who wanted to get ahead in journalism or have a career in media or whatever, and say, what can I learn from Katie Couric, and, you know, how to do my best, how to thrive and survive in tough times, how to take the flack and keep none of that. It's all crap about, inside.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of inside gossip and score settling.
It's really, I mean, it's kind of sad in a way how in your career, you know, I mean, it's not like she's going to come back in any way, shape, manner or form. About 6 months, you'll see this book at the Goodwill.
Well, we'll see, BJ. I suspect it is going to end up at least initially on the bestseller list. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Gail is in Manhattan. Hello, Gail.
Oh, hi there. Just a couple quick points. Katie Couric might have been so popular in the morning because she had Matt Lauer and Al Roker, and she just, it's harder for women to carry an audience. What about your own area of talk radio? I've been listening to a lot of the conservative talk radio shows, your own and all the others. And how many are run by women? How many female talk radio hosts are there? They don't seem to last. There's Rita Cosby. Can't think of too many others.
Well, how about Laura Ingraham? Laura Ingraham was very successful on not only our station but nationally. You have Dana Loesch, who's one of the most listened to talk shows in the country. On our station for many years, you had Lynn Samuels, who had a very devoted audience in spite of kind of being against the grain of the politics of a lot of the listeners. You have Juliet Huddy. You have Lydia Serrano.
An hour in the morning. Come on, she's doing
But she was also on for 3 hours a day for 3 years. So that mean there was a break from the sexism?
The shows I listen to are all men. I do think they dominate. I don't knock it. I think people prefer to listen to men. That's my point.
All right. Well, I think there are a number of very talented female talk show hosts. And as far as Katie Couric blaming sexism for why she didn't do well at night, I think it's baloney. Barbara Walters was, and I'm no great fan of Barbara Walters, But Barbara Walters was anchoring the ABC Evening News in the late 70s. So I think it's baloney. I think it's baloney. 800, I think maybe you may, Monica Crowley had a very successful talk radio career on not only on this station, but elsewhere. But I think maybe you have a point in that maybe the bulk of the audience, a majority of the audience, not necessarily to this show, but a majority of the audience that listens to talk radio might be male, and maybe they resonate more with a male personality. But I think if you're good enough and you're talented enough, you can overcome that. And you can overcome any perceived sexism or bias on the part of the audience, which I don't think it exists, honestly. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to – well, let me take a break, actually. But first, let me talk to you a little bit about Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy Precious Metals – have you seen what's happening with inflation? It is crazy. Legacy Precious Metals is your solution to fighting inflation, to whipping inflation now. You remember the acronym in the Gerald Ford days? WIN, whip inflation now. How do you whip inflation now? You do it with Legacy Precious Metals. So what does that mean? If you have an existing retirement account, you can roll it into a gold or a silver IRA, and you should do so with Legacy Precious Metals. The gold and silver have always been hedges against inflation. So the worse inflation gets, the less the dollar is worth, the more your gold and silver are worth. That's why gold should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio. And Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. So contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Call 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or you can visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. That is Faith George Michael. After he was a WABC talk show host and a sportscaster, he then became a musician, and that was one of his hit songs before he passed away. I'm just kidding. That was a different George Michael, but they did both pass away. All right. Hey, by the way, you know what tonight is? For those of you that have been watching the mayoral race, tonight is the mayoral debate, the first mayoral debate in the general election between Curtis Sliwa and Eric Adams. So it's going to be a one-hour debate, starts at 7 p.m. on Channel 4. I don't know why no one is carrying this on radio. That is unfortunate because I might be driving around at that time. I might miss a portion of it, but I don't know. I'm hoping that Curtis can land a few knockout blows here that will at least get the mainstream press to start treating him as if he should be treated equal to Eric Adams. But we'll see what happens. I am certainly going to watch it, and then we'll have a few highlights if there's anything noteworthy that happens. We'll have some highlights of it tomorrow on this program as well. 800-848-9222. Talk a little bit about the Katie Couric media tour promoting her book, and I am looking forward to I don't know if I'm going to actually take the time to read it. I keep going back and forth because I don't have exactly a tremendous amount of free time, but I really do find the drama over this book so fascinating. I find the stories that she's chosen to share so interesting, and her reaction to these stories when she's asked about it, I find so interesting. So I'm on the fence about whether I'm going to read it or not, but I am interested in all this coverage. 800-848-9222. Joe is here in Manhattan. Hello, Joe.
Listen, Frank, you know, the other day you were discussing sleep hours that Kurt, for example, Curtis actually hardly sleeps, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours. And then years ago he said that when he died, then he would sleep as much as he wanted.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
Now, my question to you is 7 days a week, totally, how many hours do you sleep 7 days a week?
Any thoughts about what we're actually talking about, Joe, rather than...
I'm calling regarding Couric.
All right, so go ahead. Make your comment about Katie Couric.
Right.
We'll save the sleep questions for Friday.
The worst thing, she's a sleazebag, number one, okay? I read the summary and we've ordered the book out of curiosity, you know, and spitefully, in a sense, against ourselves for buying a book like that. Now, vis-a-vis my dear Larry King, one of my favorites of all time, you know, that's the worst thing she could do. That's all hearsay. And when someone dies, don't blaspheme that person. If you have something good to say, say it. But don't say anything evil. She should be sued to the hilt for every single penny she earned from the book, I think, by a member of late Larry King's family.
Well, and thank you for the call, Joe. I certainly think it's terrible what she did to Larry King. If you're not up on that, basically she said that Larry King made an untoward pass at her after they'd been out to dinner. And I found her recitation of that event so out of line and so distasteful. And for her to name him after he's dead, and I realize she probably started writing this book when he was still alive, but when Larry King has no opportunity to respond to this and no opportunity to give his side of the story, I found it really incredibly distasteful, in my view. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Andrew in Stanhope. Hello, Andrew.
Doing well, Frank. And I want to say, Katie Couric, he also lied or edited deceptively. It was about the Second Amendment, and there was a town hall, and she asked who has suggestions for common sense gun reform. And she edited it so it seemed like there was a long pause. But the camera that someone set up in the back, a wide shot, showed instantly several people raised their
right.
hand.
Right.
But she held it on a close-up and, like, had the music. And then said, well, it was for dramatic effect. But that changed the content of it. Just like at CNN, the guy had interviewed Michael Jackson. And Michael Jackson only agreed to do it if he could put his own camera up in the back. And when the guy was speaking to Michael Jackson on camera, he was saying, he's a great father, praise. Then with the voiceover in the studio, he was saying, Jackson is a monster. Jackson, like, it's just there. So then Jackson released it unedited. And he's, you know, so she busted the same move as that. Like, she edited it to make them look bad. You know, it was a form of lying. It wasn't for drama.
Well, thank you, Andrew. 800-848-WABC. Larry's in Brooklyn. Hello, Larry.
Yeah, hi, Frank. You know, I just want to make a comment first about Katie Couric. You know, they put her on the evening news because at the time she was regaled almost like a sex symbol, and she was a fabulous journalist, but she did not fit the bill as an anchor at all. And I think that shows the shamelessness of the media. If somebody is sexy, they try to maximize the profit from that, and it didn't work. Okay. And having said, I just want to ask you a question. I agree with you. I mean, I respect your position about Larry King. I don't necessarily agree with it, but she didn't have compassion on a dead person. But what about a compassion on living? Because she did something ghastly to Sarah Palin when she was running for vice president with John McCain. She had an interview with her, and she set up in advance a trap. She said to Sarah Palin, what Supreme Court cases can you name that had major impact on society? And Sarah Palin is not a lawyer. She's not very sophisticated. She's a beautiful person, and she's only running for vice president, and she was predictably.
Did you say she's only running for vice president? Was that what you said there?
Well, I mean, she's not like, you know, a vice president is like in the background. You know, she's not the president.
Right, you're a heartbeat away from the presidency, right.
Right, but she trapped her into a humiliating episode. She searched and maybe named Roe versus Wade, and that was it. She couldn't name any others. And Katie Couric said, any others you can name besides Roe v. Wade? And she drew a complete blank, and that was planned out. And after I saw that, I said, Katie Couric is a monster.
Well, Larry, look, I'm not going to defend Katie Couric's character because I have no idea about her character. I could draw some suppositions based on some of the things that's in this book. But I completely disagree with you on the on that being the reason that she's a monster. Let me tell you something. If you're running for vice president of the United States, especially with a gentleman, John McCain, who, if he were to be elected, would have been the oldest president ever to be elected, you had better show that you have some understanding, some knowledge of the Supreme Court and the important role that it's played in American society, especially over the last 100 years. I say over the last 100 years because prior to that, you didn't see the Supreme Court issuing a lot of decisions that nullified legislation. You had the Dred Scott decision. You had Marbury versus Madison. But they didn't get crazy with starting to declare things unconstitutional until about 100 years ago, and it's gotten much worse. If you're running for vice president, you ought to be able to name a few Supreme Court cases. I don't think that's a crazy thing. It's certainly, if you ask someone a question and they can't name it, doesn't make you a monster. 800-848-WABC. Diane is in New Jersey. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
I know you know. Good. You know what I just wanted to say? Like, I was talking to my husband about this Katie Couric thing with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and it's kind of weird because Ruth Bader Ginsburg was alive when they broadcast that interview, right? When she had the interview, it got broadcast. But you would think if she really cared, she would have brought out, oh, this interview, like they left Katie Couric or channel, whatever channel, you know, NBC, left this out of my interview, and I said this, you know, it never, like, there was no protest from Ruth Bader.
Well, it was actually just the opposite. Right? It was just the opposite. A Supreme Court, the director of public affairs, and I talked about this at the time that this came out, but the director of public affairs for the Supreme Court asked Katie Couric and Yahoo News to take that stuff out of the interview.
And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she didn't have any, you know, she didn't realize this important thing was left out of it, really. Like, you know what I mean?
Well,
like,
no, she wanted it out.
She wanted it out.
That's what we're led to believe, because it was the person who set up the interview that asked that it be removed.
Okay. I thought Katie Couric decided herself to take it out.
Well, if you read the book, her reaction to the director of public affairs asking to take this stuff out was to leave a portion of her answer in, and then to not include the other portion. And she said in her interview with Savannah Guthrie yesterday that, one, they make editorial decisions like that all the time, but two, she wished that she had asked a follow-up question. But I agree with you. I mean, once somebody gives an interview, you should include the totality of her response, especially if it's somebody that's an important part of American society, as Ruth Bader Ginsburg is. And I thought that was journalistic malpractice on the part of Katie Couric. No question.
It could have been, like, important in the course of the United States, even, you know.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely.
It, you know? It's so maddening, you know. It's, like, just disgraceful. It's
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you very much for the call, Diane. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Coming up at 2:30. Hey, some of you may remember this story. I was telling the story of James Leininger, who around the time that he was two started having dreams of being on an airplane and being shot down by the Japanese. And then when he was two and three, he had all these detailed visions of being shot down by the Japanese and knew about all sorts of, you know, he knew about the Battle of Iwo Jima, all sorts of other things that a two-year-old and a three-year-old generally wouldn't know. And his family came to the conclusion that he was actually a reincarnated World War II fighter pilot. A fighter pilot by the name of James Houston Jr., who'd been killed in World War II and was shot down in World War II and then was reincarnated as their son, James Leininger. So we have, coming up at 2:30, this young man's father, Bruce Leininger. So we're going to continue the discussion that we had a couple of months ago on reincarnation and so forth. Then, at 3:30... there are a lot of a lot of elections in the state that we're keeping an eye on. One of the races that is very, very heated, and it's getting a lot of attention, especially on Long Island, is the race for Suffolk County District Attorney, where the Democrat, the incumbent, Tim Sinney, is running for re-election, and he's running against the Republican, Ray Tierney. Well, Ray Tierney has agreed to come on live at 3:30 to talk about some of the issues related to the DA's race. And again, Tim Sinney is welcome on this show anytime he wants to come on as well. And hopefully we'll be able to feature some of the other candidates that are involved in hotly contested races around the state, or at least in our listening area. 800-848-9222. Hello, John in Bayonne. Hey, John.
Hi, Frank. As far as the Cork, I think people saw her as a worthless person with a fake phony smile that she has. We could see right through that. And I get that guy who was speaking about the Sarah Palin interview, he was right on with that. Frank,
well, why do you think that that's an unfair thing to ask a vice presidential candidate?
Because it wasn't designed to get an answer. It was designed to make her look very bad. Yes, she was bad, but it wasn't designed. It was designed exactly.
Well, but so in 2000, John, in 2000, when Bush was running for president and when Trump was poised to run for president, journalists did the same thing to both of those guys, Bush and Trump. They asked Bush to name the leaders of four countries, and Bush did okay. He was able to name two and describe at least one other one, and that did put to rest at least some questions about his intelligence. Trump basically said, I'm not going to play your game. You're trying to embarrass me the way that reporter did to Mr. Bush. And I think by Trump answering those questions the way that he did, he sort of reinforced this idea that he was in charge and was not going to play the media's game. Sarah Palin, by looking like a deer caught in the headlights, she reinforced this notion that not only did she have no idea what was going on when it comes to public policy, but she reinforced the notion that she had no idea how to handle a hostile press corps.
Well, you make very good points, but that doesn't make us like Katie Couric more. As actually, for whatever reason, it made us despise her. I don't know why. It just that's the reaction she gets. And this is somebody who worked for Yahoo News. Listen, she's made more money than we could ever imagine. Frank, do me a favor. Have Curtis answer the question tomorrow if they bring it up on moving the Jefferson statue. I think Curtis would definitely score some points if that question could be brought up. I know Curtis would be very against taking.
Yeah, well, he's actually
the Declaration of Independence, right? Taking its statue down.
Well, not only that, but he's been such an important. That statue has been such an important part of the City Hall architecture for the last 187 years. And Curtis has already spoken out about that. He actually held a press conference in front of City Hall opposing the moving of the statue. So he will be. I have a feeling if that question comes up, he will be very vocal in explaining why he will not be moving that statue. But it is interesting. Now, I don't want to rediscuss the Katie Couric, Sarah Palin interview of 2008, because after all, who cares? Katie Couric's not on television anymore, and Sarah Palin's not in office anymore and not running for anything. But of all the things that you could dislike Katie Couric for, asking Sarah Palin a tough question is not something that I think is even in my top 100. I mean, who cares? I thought that was a fair question. And it was not as if Sarah Palin did poorly with Katie Couric. You know, she was on with Charlie Gibson and couldn't name the Bush Doctrine. She couldn't explain what the Bush Doctrine was. This is while the war in Iraq is going on and the war in Afghanistan. So, I mean, had Trump done that, forget about it. That would have been, first of all, Trump would have handled the question much better. But that's a story for another day. But yes, Katie Couric is no longer with the Today Show. She's no longer with CBS Evening News. She is no longer even with
Yahoo.
But I have a feeling that the boost of media attention that she is getting with this book tour and the sales from this book tour itself could potentially and lead her to getting another job in media. Maybe she'll launch her own podcast, something like what Megyn Kelly is doing, who is apparently making loads of dough with her own podcast, similar to what O'Reilly is doing. O'Reilly, through BillO'Reilly.com, no corporate overseer or anything, has this media empire of his own. He's writing books. He's on radio. He's on TV. He's got his website. So, the thing now is the most important thing these days in media is name recognition and, for better or worse, a social media following. Because if you have name recognition and you have a social media following, you'll always be able to do something on your own. And have at least a big portion of your followers follow you. That's why I'm always trying to encourage you to follow me on social media. And you could do so on Twitter at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. And you can find me on Facebook at Facebook.com/MoranoFan. Because the bigger social media following that all of us who are media personalities have, the more leverage that we have, not only within the marketplace of talk radio or talk television or newspapers, whatever particular brand of communication somebody is in, but the easier it is for, if God forbid I get fired one day, God forbid, that to do something else. So 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we're discussing. Meantime, I do want to talk to you about Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea is a phenomenal product which I drink every day. I had two big glasses before I left, and I can't say enough great things about Life Change Tea. This is a great product which is basically just two refreshing glasses of iced tea each and every day. And it keeps you regular. It gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. And it's a gentle daily cleanse that not only tastes great, but it works to get things moving. If you're feeling stopped up, if you're feeling bloated, that's never a good feeling, and Life Change Tea can help with that. It's all natural. There are no GMOs. One package lasts you a whole month. Life Change Tea is only available by logging on to the website getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And if you use the promo code Frank, you can get free shipping. So Life Change Tea, promo code Frank at getthetea.com. They have a ton of other great supplements on there as well at getthetea.com. And if you use the promo code Frank when you order, you'll be able to get free shipping anywhere in these United States. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank.
WABC.
Yahoo.
WABC.
is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
That's Percy Faith with the theme from A Summer Place. So as you probably know, if you listen to this show, my wife, Rachel, is with child. She's due December 6th. And I am so she had said to me months ago, she'd said, you know, I'd really like it if you she's going to take maternity leave. She'll probably be off for a few months from her job. And she normally works from home. So maybe she'll do some freelancing from home. But she had said to me a few months ago, she said, you know, if you could take some time for paternity leave, that would be really helpful. And initially, my reaction was that I don't want to take very much time at all. And I would talk to other friends of mine, you know, Arthur Idala, who is a very celebrated attorney. I asked him, how much time did you take before after your last child was born? He said 30 hours. 30 hours. I was Joe Piscopo, you could hear every Sunday night from 6 to 9 p.m. I said, when your son Joey was born, how much time did you take off? He said, and Joe is a dad's dad. His whole existence is around parenting. He said, well, I was actually on stage that very night. I worked that night. And, you know, now I'm seeing all the discussion regarding Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, being criticized in some quarters for taking paternity leave. And my initial plan after talking with Rachel and hearing about all the things she's going to need help with is I was going to try and take three weeks off after the baby was born. And our owner, John Catsimatidis, blessed that 3 weeks. Our program director, Dave Labrosi, said, yeah, no, definitely take at least 2 to 3 weeks. Even our president, Chad, who's not exactly known as a softie, even he was fine with 3 weeks. Now, again, it's tough for me to take 3 weeks. I don't like to take a lot of time off to begin with, because in a field like radio, which is so competitive, you worried that a few things could happen. One, you worry that, you know, if you stop putting on interesting shows for 3 weeks, that maybe the audience finds something else to listen to. And you're also worried that, God forbid, the person that's filling in for you, management decides and the audience decides they like better than you, then they could certainly find a way to make them the permanent host of that show. Now, I have a lot of faith in this audience and that they would listen to me again if I came back. But the point is, in radio, especially a field as competitive as radio, you don't like to take, you know, a lot of time off. So as of now, my plan is about 3 weeks. But in listening to the discussion regarding Pete Buttigieg and the criticism of him for taking paternity leave, and you think about it, like, here he is the head of a pretty important cabinet department. He's the Secretary of Transportation at a time when we're dealing with a supply chain crisis. And you think maybe he should come to work. Maybe what's happening with the country is a little more important than his personal family needs. And I have to be honest, I don't view my job as any less consequential than Pete Buttigieg or anybody else's. So last couple of days, I've been starting to feel a little guilty about taking off a couple of weeks after the baby was born. So I'd like to ask you, particularly the men in our audience, what did you do when your child was born? And do you think, and anybody can answer this, do you think that 3 weeks is too much time for me to take off? 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-WABC. You know, my friend Jerry Caramarata, who I may invite back on the show. He was a
commissioner in the Giuliani administration. He is the author of the book, The Fun Book of Fatherhood. He's a great guy. And he has talked a lot about, he was the first person as a New York City teacher in the 70s to take paternity leave. It was something that didn't even really exist at the time. But I'm going to talk with him about it, maybe even on air, and then hopefully I'll see what you have to say on the subject. 800-848-9222. John is in Manhattan. Hello there, John.
Hey, Frank. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Congratulations on the upcoming birth of your baby.
Thanks, John. Thank you.
And, yeah, man, hey, enjoy it, because those 20 years fly by fast. Let me tell you. Greatest thing in the world to have a baby. Listen, if anybody knows how to get in touch with Curtis Sliwa, anybody, please ask Eric Adams, if these kids being killed around us today, if these kids being shot and killed were white, wouldn't we have stop and frisk? Of course we would have stop and frisk. Why? Because even the liberals would be demanding stop and frisk. If it was their kids dying, and the only reason the liberals aren't saying that, it's because they virtue signal to the black community. But if it was the white kids dying, believe me, even in Riverdale, if you had gangs in Riverdale killing each other, Oliver Coppell, everybody would come out and say, Barbara Streisand, if it was her nieces and nephews, would say, she would call the biggest Irish cop, Sean Connery, and say, I don't care how rough you have to get, I want you to, if you have to rough them up, you have to smack their heads together, I want the guns, because that's the only thing that works.
Yeah, and John, we're going to have a full discussion of the mayor's race tomorrow in the 2 o'clock hour after the debate. But let me just say, you know, you got to keep in mind, not just you, John, but everybody listening, that the population that is voting in the New York City mayor's race is not the kind of crowd that typically listens to this radio station. I would venture to guess that maybe 70% of the people that listen to this radio station voted for President Trump, maybe even more. You have to understand that Curtis needs to get elected mayor in a city where 80% of the people voted for someone other than Donald Trump. So for Curtis to bring out these broadsides and phrase things the way you phrased it, John, say the libs want this, and if the whites had that, that is a way to alienate the 80% of New York City voters that hate Donald Trump and hate everything he stands for, that Curtis needs to vote for him in order to win this election. So rather than try to make a point about stop and frisk, what you need to be thinking, if you want to help Curtis, and Curtis is listening to this show right now, that message is delivered. If you want to help Curtis, what you need to be thinking is, what can Curtis say or do to convince 80% of New Yorkers who can't stand Donald Trump, can't stand Republicans, and can't stand conservatism to vote for him? That's the question that if you want to help Curtis, you can answer. 800-848-9222. Those of you that are holding, we'll get to you after the top of the hour. We're also going to talk reincarnation. I have a lot of other interesting things coming your way after the top of the hour as well. We'll talk about the Suffolk County DA's race at 3:30 and a bunch of other interesting, fascinating subjects that will tickle the imagination, occasionally your funny bone, and make you scratch your head. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Until next hour, in the words of the great Bob Barker, help control the pet population and make sure your dog or cat is spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Hello, everyone. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. I'm a football fan. I am a casual football fan. I would characterize myself as a big baseball fan. Back in the day, I would certainly have characterized myself as a huge pro wrestling fan. So I am by no means an obsessive football fan. I like to watch football. I like to watch the games, and that's pretty much it. I don't know the names of many of the players on each team. I don't have the records. I can't tell you who's leading the NFC East and what their record is. I can't tell you who's leading the AFC West and what their record is. I like to watch the games. That's it. And that's totally as casual a football fan as you can be. Watch the game. Hopefully you get invited over somewhere. Hopefully there's no kneeling. If they can avoid playing the black national anthem, then to me that's a winning day. And again, there's nothing against the black national anthem, but I tend to think this country should have one national anthem played before sporting events. But that's a subject for another day. I'll tell you, one of the things that I really do enjoy, though, on the Fox coverage of the National Football League is Terry Bradshaw. I am a big fan of Terry Bradshaw. He is somebody that I've enjoyed as an actor. I love him as a football analyst. I don't remember much of his career as a football player, but I love him as a personality. I've been trying to get him on the show for a while now, and I have not yet had any luck. So I'm a Terry Bradshaw fan, always have been, and he makes my enjoyment of both Thursday night football and Sunday afternoon football far, far greater. So my biases are on the table. Fox broadcaster Terry Bradshaw is receiving a lot of criticism for some comments on the Thursday night football pregame show about Erin Andrews and her country-themed clothing during an interview with Tampa Bay Buccaneers linebacker Devin White. So Andrews' interview aired during the network's pregame show before Tampa Bay's game against the Philadelphia Eagles on Thursday, with White and Andrew conducting the segment in a horse stable to discuss White's love of horses. After the interview, Andrews appeared on a screen behind Fox's pregame crew as the sideline reporter and asked, "I do want to know, how old were you when you first got on top of a horse, first rode one?" Kurt Menefee repeated the question, and Bradshaw replied that he was 3 years old before continuing into the comments that sparked the backlash. These are the remarks that Terry Bradshaw made after the presentation by Erin Andrews.
You got your cowboy boots on and your shirt. You're looking good. That was nice. I enjoyed that interview.
Let me hear that one more time.
You got your cowboy boots on and your shirt. You're looking good. That was nice. I enjoyed that interview.
You got your cowboy boots on and your shirt. You're looking good. That was nice. I enjoyed that interview. That has led to a chorus of Twitter critics talking about how creepy and cringy Terry Bradshaw is. Tyler Conway, kind of leading the charge, saying you can hear Terry Bradshaw mentally reading the HR email in real time. Now, someone else writes, Terry Bradshaw, a little cringy in that interaction with Erin Andrews. Now, Terry Bradshaw is a 73-year-old Hall of Fame Steelers quarterback, and he's been an analyst for football for decades. He made this comment toward Andrews 3 days after Raiders head coach John Gruden resigned from his position following leaks of emails that contained homophobic and misogynistic language. Included in the exchanges were topless photos of the Washington football team's cheerleaders. And a lot of people are saying that this was in poor taste on the part of Terry Bradshaw. I have to say, I completely disagree. I don't think there's anything wrong with what Terry Bradshaw said there. For starters, you know, Terry Bradshaw is a Western guy. You know, he is born in Louisiana. He is somebody that's so identified with, you know, his father was from Tennessee. He lived in Iowa. He's lived a very rural kind of a cowboy existence. So I construed it as he likes that she's wearing cowboy gear, cowboy boots and a cowboy shirt and this and that. And he likes that style because that's his style. That's the kind of stuff that he wears. But even if he was saying she's pretty, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? Are we now at a point in society where we want to make any interaction between men and women so sterile, so devoid of any whiff of sexuality or flirtation that we're now at the point where everyone on TV needs to interact with one another as if they're androgynous robots? Because I hope not. That's not a society that I want to live in. And for a 73-year-old entertainer, which is what I view Terry Bradshaw as, for him to not be able to, for 9 seconds, tell Erin Andrews that she looks good, I like that interview. You got your cowboy. Let me hear it again, Matt.
You got your cowboy boots on and your shirt. You're looking good. That was nice. I enjoyed that interview.
I think the people that are saying this is creepy, in a lot of ways, they're telling you something about what's going on in their own head. What are you thinking, Pally, when you say that's a creepy comment? Come on. 800-848-WABC if you want to comment. Also, I am wondering if it's appropriate for me to take 3 months off after my forthcoming child is born. 800-848-WABC. Let me begin with Nikki in Manhattan. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Frank. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
Good. With regard to your paternity leave, I would think 3 weeks would be an agonizingly long time for you. I mean, paternity leave, like maternity leave, isn't for everybody. But I think you should give it a good week and a half or two.
Okay. So you say maybe a week and a half to 2 weeks.
Yeah, and then you could really, we'll see what Rachel's going to contend with for a while. You know, that will be helpful.
Okay, all right. I like that. That's a good suggestion. Okay, good.
And with regard to Terry Bradshaw, I can't believe, I agree with you. Anybody that found those comments lascivious, it's between their ears. I mean, there was absolutely nothing wrong with what he said.
Yeah, are you?
He is a conservative, so he's a, you know, it was a good reason to target him.
See, I didn't even know that he was a conservative, but I don't even care that he's a conservative. If he's a conservative or liberal, there's nothing wrong with those comments, as far as I could tell.
Absolutely nothing wrong with him. And he's, you know, he's known as kind of a farm boy, horse, obviously,
exactly.
Riding horses at three. He was just going with the spirit of the thing.
Right.
But it didn't even sound creepy.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly, Nikki, exactly. You know, it's not like he said, oh, I like those boots. Oh, boy, that's some shirt you're wearing. I mean, ooh-yah. Okay, that's creepy. He didn't do that. The comments are totally innocuous. And you know what I wonder about the people that feel the need to make these comments on Twitter is why is your life so vapid and meaningless that this is what you have the time to pay attention to? My goodness. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Frank is in Babylon. Hello, Frank.
Hi, Frank. Good speaking with you again.
Thanks.
I wanted to say wonderful news about your expecting your first baby, and I'm not too clear. Did you say 3 weeks or 3 months?
3 weeks. We were talking about
3 weeks, not 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months. I think somebody would shoot me, either my employer or my wife, either one of the two.
That's a dream job if you could get 3 months. But anyway, I'm a father. Five, and I just recall, I mean, all my kids are grown now, but, you know, I'm talking years and years ago, it was luxurious to even have a few days off, but you got to remember, in the very beginning, as far as my recollection is concerned, the first few weeks, the infant's going to do a lot of sleeping, and it's going to be mainly your wife caring, you know, for the baby's, infant's needs. I more or less supported my wife during that period of time. And she needed help. And of course, I would, and bond with the baby as much as possible, but it isn't the same kind of thing as when baby's several months older or several weeks older, when they're more alert and it's more, it's much better time, in my opinion, to be able to bond with the baby or the infant.
All right. Well, so you're saying don't do it after the baby's born. Take it a little later.
If it's possible for you to, like, spread out the time a little more, say maybe a week, and then another spread, you know, week a little longer. Initially, there is going to be a lot that you need to do to help, be helpful. And, of course, you want to bond with the baby immediately, the infant. And, if you can take the responsibility of some of the bottle feedings, definitely do that. And, spend time with the infant just holding it, because it knows you're there. Definitely knows that you're there, and it knows it's someone different other than its mother. And that, as time goes on, it'll know that you're its father. So, but what I'm saying is, my recollection was that as the infant grew and got older, they spent more time being alert and actually looking at my face and recognizing me, coming to recognize me, when I would interact with it. With the infant.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate that. Very helpful. 800-848-9222. Charles is in Queens. Hello, Charles.
Yeah, hi. Great show, as usual.
Thank you.
I'd like to suggest, I don't think I've ever heard of anybody doing it, and I'm sure there are some negatives there, but you might want to consider something like maybe even 5 or 6 weeks off, or 5 weeks off, but 2 days in these 5 weeks, 2 days out of the six that you usually put on a show, do only two. Spread apart, like, let's say, Sunday and Thursday, for example. I'm sure there are negatives there, and you can make those two shows really dynamite, more. Then again, it might take away time from your wife. But, I think that's, to me, it sounds reasonable. Only 2 days a week to make the show, and like 5 weeks off.
I'm not going to do 5 weeks off, Charles. What I am going to try and do is try and get a Comrex device, as some of the hosts have, that would allow me to do the show from home even after I come back, maybe for a month or so. But we'll see. 800-848-WABC. John is in Brooklyn. Hello, John.
Hey, Frank. Listen, again, congratulations to you and Rachel. I happen to be an impending grandfather.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. November 9th. But I got to tell you, listen, the big reveal is that you said you're so concerned about the possibility that a substitute host would do better than you. First of all, no one's better than Frankie Five Boroughs. Second of all, you have the law on your side. I'm not exactly 100% sure, but I think over the course of a year, you're allowed to take as much as, 4 weeks off.
Yeah, I know the law, John. I know the law, John. But it's just different in a field that's as competitive as talk radio is.
No, it isn't. You have protections. You have protections, and whether it's John Catsimatidis giving you his blessing, or Chad Lopez, or anybody else, you got the law on your side.
Yeah, no, I get all that, John. It's the thing is, though, and look, John and I are very good friends. We were friends long before I worked at this radio station. I don't think he would do anything, untoward. But what if they have somebody? What if Howard Stern, somebody, or Imus, or Rush Limbaugh comes on for 3 weeks? Don't you think they're going to find a way somehow to reassign me somewhere else and let that person continue to do the show? I mean, that's just the reality of the business that we're in. And that's fine. You go into this field knowing that it's a collection of gladiator matches on a daily basis. 800-848-WABC. Will is in Rockland County. Hello, Will.
Hey, maybe I'm an old school guy, but I think you take the day off to bring your wife and baby home from the hospital. And other than that, daddy goes to work. That's what daddy does.
All right. Well, so, Will, I think you're speaking for a lot of people. Unfortunately, one of the people is not my wife. So anything that you could say to convince her, Will?
If you're the main, I don't know what your business is, but if you're the main breadwinner, you got to go to work. Your career is, you're the dad. You support the family, you know, not to say that your wife doesn't support the family, but that's your career. Daddy goes to work. I mean, I have kids myself. They're grown now, but, you know, I couldn't. I was a cop when they were born. I'm a retired cop now. I still work, but I'm in another field. But my kids are grown. But when I was a young man, things was a struggle. I had to go to work, and that's what Daddy does.
He goes to work. I get it, Will. Thank you. I got to run. We're going to talk to Bruce Leininger in just a minute. But what good is working all that time if you see all your money eaten away by inflation? Well, that's where legacy precious metals can help. See, precious metals, gold and silver, they are a hedge against inflation, and they protect you in your retirement. So if you have an existing retirement account, you should think about rolling it into a gold or a silver IRA. And if you do that, do it with legacy precious metals. Gold really should be a part of every investor's portfolio under all circumstances, but especially now with inflation going through the roof. Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Call 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or visit legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com.
77 WABC, where the action is.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. 77 WABC. The Other Side of Midnight presents.
What you're about to hear is not a news broadcast. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery. This is the Morano Mystery.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano here on 77 WABC. You know, we like to explore topics that are a little mysterious, subjects that we don't necessarily have the answers to. I don't think there's a subject more mysterious and more unknown than what happens to someone's soul and their consciousness when we die. Now, a couple of months ago, I told the story of James Leininger, who, starting at age 2, was seemingly able to recall a past life. I found the story pretty compelling. A lot of listeners did, too. A lot of people called with questions. And lo and behold, it is one of the episodes in the Netflix documentary series Surviving Death, which deals with a whole bunch of information on this subject, weaves together innovative new research, firsthand accounts of people that might have experience like this. But I am just thrilled in that today we have the father of James Leininger on the program with us. He's the author of the book Soul Survivor, The Reincarnation of a World War II Fighter Pilot. Bruce, thanks so much for joining me on the radio.
Pleased and privileged to be here, Frank.
The privilege is all mine. Now, for any of our listeners that might not have heard me tell your story, your wife's story, and your son's story previously, tell me about your son, James, and when you first started to realize that he might not be like every other ordinary two-year-old.
Okay, well, it started just after we moved to Lafayette, Louisiana, just right around his second birthday, and he started to have violent nightmares 5 or 6 nights a week. Now, I have 4 other children, and they would have a night terror every once in a while, but this was repetitive, and it was like he was kicking and screaming under his covers, and it was like he was fighting for his life. Well, he was just turning 2, so he wasn't really articulate yet. But as he started to articulate things, the first things that he said were, "Airplane crash on fire, little man can't get out." And, you know, where did that come from? And then as he got a little bit older, he also had this fascination with aircraft. As they went on, he started to give more and more detail. for instance, one night, well, what happened to your plane? Well, I got shot in the engine. Well, who shot your plane? The Japanese. How did you know it was the Japanese? The big red sun. And then he started.
He's saying that at 2 years old, when he'd have no idea what World War II was and what the Japanese flag looks like.
That's right. And then, gee, what kind of plane was it? He said a Corsair. I said a Corsair. Now, I knew what a Corsair was, but how could he even know that word? And then he went on and he described the flight characteristics of the aircraft, that it always wanted to turn left when it took off, and the tires would break when it would land. Well, it just went on and on for 4 or 5 months. It was in late August. My wife came and got me and said, listen, James is now talking about this, where he would come out of these nightmares and talk about it, but then he started to just extemporaneously remember things or talk about things. And so as he was getting ready for bed and he'd get into this dreamy state, he'd start talking. So she came and got me one night. She's got to come and listen. He's talking about what happened. So I went in and I said, well, gee, James, I said, where did your airplane come from? And he said, a boat, which, you know, knowing something about the Japanese and World War II and, you know, the kind of aircraft that might have flown in World War II, I said, a boat, huh? But it had a name. And without hesitation, he said the word Natoma.
Natoma.
And I looked at him.
The word he said was Natoma. Okay.
Yeah. And I said, that sounds Japanese to me. And he looked at me like I had a hole in my head. And he said, no, it was an American. Well, I was just a little floored. So I went and got on either Google or Yahoo at that point, because this was in 2000. And after about, I don't know, a couple of hundred hits, I found information about a World War II escort carrier called Natoma Bay, CBE-62. And I printed it out. It was from a website called NavSource, I think. And I read it, and the ship had supported the war in the Pacific against the Japanese. Where could he have gotten that name from? And as this went on, the second thing that occurred that was a kind of a hard and unusual piece of information, in addition to Natoma, was, well, who's in your dream? Well, he would say me. So one night, I just took a flyer at him. I said, is there anyone else in your dream? And he said, oh, yeah, a guy named Jack. And I was a little startled. And I said, did Jack have another name? And he said, yes, Larson. Well, I thought, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to search for anyone that, and I didn't even know how to go about it.
Sure, this was in the early 2000s. The internet was not like what it is now, where you could just basically think of a term and 9,000 search results come up. You really had to do a fair amount of digging back then.
Oh, that's right. And I didn't even know where to dig. I didn't even know what kind of shovel I needed. You know, I had no idea what was going on, other than I was really concerned because of the frequency. Now, the frequency had slowed down some. Well, I found a website called the American Battle Monuments Commission, and it's about people who were killed serving in the U.S. military, buried all over the world. And I started looking for the name Larson. Well, I found out that there's about 170 people with the last name Larson that were killed in World War II. You can go to American Battle Monuments Commission and download it, okay? Well, it gave a brief amount of information, but it didn't really give me anything to go on, other than I knew it was somebody that had to be in the Navy, and but there was nothing designating these people as pilots or anyone else. So I was really baffled by it. And then the third event that occurred was my father had served in World War II right at the end of the war. He was in the U.S. Marines. And I was always buying him memorabilia about the Marines or books or something like that. So I'd gotten this book from a book club, and I was wanting to look at it during the Thanksgiving break. And so the day after Thanksgiving, I was sitting on a step going down into a family room in our house, and James got up early. We used to have this ritual of watching cartoons. And I said, well, the cartoons aren't on yet, but I bought this book for Poppy, and you want to sit here? It's got pictures in it. We can look at it. I got to about page 13 or 14, and it was a picture of Iwo Jima with a little diagram, mappish kind of thing. And without hesitating, he's sitting on my lap. He points at the picture, and he goes, "Daddy, that's when my plane got shot down."
Wow. See, you're looking through this book on the Battle of Iwo Jima, yeah. And James is your son James is 3 years old at this point,
right.
And
right.
And he tells you, "That's where my plane got shot down."
Yep. Not where, when.
When. Got it. Excuse me.
When. When. So I went back and I picked up this four or five page history of the ship in World War II, and lo and behold, the ship supported the Battle of Iwo Jima. I said, "Oh man, I got it." He gave me the name of a ship. He gave me a name of a person. I don't know how I'm going to find Jack Larson or what I'm going to find out about Jack Larson. And then he gives us a specific location. I said, how am I going to find out about this? Well, my father had been in a reunion group with the China Marines, and he had actually, a month before, had actually passed through Lafayette, Louisiana, on his way to San Antonio for a reunion. I said, well, maybe there's a reunion group. So I started doing the internet thing and putting in keywords to see what I could find, and after about a half hour or so, I found an organization called the Escort Carrier Seamen and Airmen's Association, and it had a whole bunch of listings of reunion groups as part of the organization. And lo and behold, here's the Natoma Bay Association, and it had four names of people with their contact information. I started to contact them. It took me about 2 weeks. I finally got a guy on the phone named Leo Pyatt. And he started asking me a bunch of questions. I said, well, I was never on the ship. I couldn't tell him why I was calling because he'd have hung up. You know, well, my two-year-old's telling me about your ship. You know, they flew off of it. So I finally got around. Well, first of all, I found out that he had been on the ship during the Battle of Iwo Jima. That was one. The second was that he not just was on the ship, but he was a member of the squadron. So at that point, I just got the courage to ask him. I said, well, Mr. Pyatt, I said, can you tell me anything about a guy named Jack Larson? And without hesitating, Leo said, oh, I remember Jack. He flew off one day and we never saw him again. Well, you could have poured my brains out of my ears. I still get goosebumps talking about it. And it was almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
It was over 20 years ago, actually. I couldn't believe it. I was just dumbstruck. And so those three things would have fused in me, or four things would have fused in me that said, I got to get to the bottom of this. You know, how and what could be happening? And by this time, the process or event of reincarnation had floated through my family, and I objected to it. I thought that was BS.
And
nothing like that's happening here. I didn't believe in any of this.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you. And if people just tuning in, we're talking with Bruce Leininger. He's the author of the book Soul Survivor, The Reincarnation of a World War II Fighter Pilot. And at this point in the story, it definitely looks like there's a lot of evidence that Bruce's son, James, might have been a reincarnated World War II pilot that was shot down. And that's what I was going to ask you, Bruce, is, well, tell me about your level of skepticism in this kind of thing prior to learning all this information, because there's going to be a lot of skeptics in our audience that say, oh, no, the parents talked all that into this young boy, and that's why he thought about all this stuff. But you weren't exactly a believer in reincarnation at this point, were you?
Not exactly. There was no way I was going for it. The first word in chapter 10 of my book is BS. There was no way that this could happen. There was no way it could be a past life or a reincarnation. Okay? There was no way I was going to believe in this. At that point, I believed it ran counter to everything that I understood about my Christianity. And I'm not a devout Christian, but I grew up going to church, and, you know, but I didn't believe this kind of thing was possible. And that's where I was stymied, because all I was able to do throughout this saga that took 3 or 4 years to piece together all the information was that it didn't matter what he said. If I was able to verify what he said, it was exactly what he said. there was no variance between what he said and what the facts were.
Wow.
He described his family. He said, I had one older sister named Annie, and she was 4 years older than me. And then I had another sister named Ruth, and she was 4 years older than Annie.
And then
when we found,
this is your son speaking, and he had no older siblings that fit that description.
No, absolutely not. He's the only. He's our only child from this is my second marriage. This is my only child from my second marriage. Okay, so no, he had no older sisters or brothers. He had some stepbrothers and sisters, but none of them had any of those names. You know, there were scores of things. Like, just before he was three, he started to draw violent pictures of airplanes getting shot down, and it was like he was playing a movie in his head. He'd draw the airplanes out, he'd draw the ships out, and then he'd just start going with both hands with red crayons, just fire all over the place. And he drew hundreds of those things, at least a couple hundred. I probably still have 50 or 60 of them that I've kept as part of a collection. And he started to sign them James 3, which is a key thing. I said, James 3? I said, what are you talking about, James? What does James 3 mean? He goes, I'm the third James. I was like, oh, it's not either James Leininger. There's no third James. What are you talking about? Well, as time went on and I finally got to a reunion, 2 years later, I was invited to the Selma Bay reunion. And at that reunion, and this ties back to James 3, I found out that one man from the particular squadron that flew off the Selma Bay during the Battle of Iwo Jima, only one pilot was killed, and his name happened to be James M. Houston Jr., and he was killed during the Battle of Iwo Jima, shot down at Chichi Jima, crashed into the harbor, and died.
Wow. I mean, you must have just turned white.
When I read that, it not just turned white, but you could have poured my brains out of my ears, okay? I mean, dumbstruck. And the description of what was said by James matched what was written. He even described what happened to his plane. And what happened to his plane was that it got shot in the engine, caught on fire, and crashed in the water, and he couldn't get out. Well, 3 years later, I found a group that was actually contacted by a guy who said, I flew on a mission that day because I had posted something on a website when I came home from the reunion about what happened at Chichi Jima, and if anybody ever read it, to get a hold of me. Well, this guy named John Durham contacted me, and I found out that there were four eyewitnesses to what happened to that plane. They saw what happened. And each of them described to a T what James described happening to his plane. Now, do you know how anonymous death is in the air for pilots? And here were four people that were able to verify what happened. They had come from another aircraft carrier, and they were bombing the harbor at Chichi Jima, which also happens to be the place where George Bush was shot down. Okay, that's just a smattering. Then there's other things he did that, again, are beyond belief. And he started to receive G.I. Joe dollars of his interest in the military. At that point, he wanted to be a pilot. And this and one other anecdote I'll give you, it just ties it all together in this giant ball. He started to get these dollars, and the first one he got, it had brown hair. It was a standard G.I. Joe doll. And he named it Billy. I said, oh, Billy's kind of a common name. You know, he would nickname his stuffed animals different things. So I figured there's nothing strange about that. I think 6 months later or so, maybe for Christmas, he got one that had blonde hair. And he named it Leon. Now, I thought that was strange. Where did he get the name Leon from? The only person that I know that has the name Leon, and I'm giving away my age, is Leon Spinks, who used to be a professional boxer.
Sure, I'm a fight fan myself. I'm familiar with Leon Spinks, sure.
You know what? You know, where'd that come from? And then about a year later, he got a third doll, and it had red hair, and he named it Walter. And again, there's no one in my family named Walter. No one in my wife's family named Walter. Where'd this come from? Well, by that time, I had learned that there were 21 men that were killed serving aboard Nome Bay. And as it turned out, there was one guy from the same squadron that this guy James M. Houston Jr. flew from, because that was the guy shot down at Chichijima. His name was Billy Peeler, and Billy had brown hair. And I also learned that there was a guy named Leon Connor from Eufaula, Alabama, who had blonde hair.
Wow.
And then there was another pilot from the FM2 Wildcat named Walter Devlin, who had red hair. He was an Irishman from Queens. So I was a little alarmed because of those three names of those three G.I. Joe dolls, and their characteristics matched the pictures, because by this time I had done enough research. We'd even gone after the families to see what we could learn about these men. So it was Christmas Day, and he was going to bed. So I just walked up to him, and I said, James, why did you name them Billy, Walter, and Leon? He said, because they greeted me when I went to heaven.
Wow. My goodness. Wow.
All three of those guys were pilots in the same squadron, and all had been killed before him. Two of them had been killed in October of 1944 and one in November of 1944. And James M. Houston Jr. was killed March 3rd, 1945.
That is what? Crazy.
But, and then the next anecdote I'll give you is he told us where he picked us and why he picked us to be his parents.
Well, that leads me. That was exactly what I was going to ask. Of all the little boys who James Houston Jr. could have chosen, why your son? I was going to ask your theory on that.
Well, the stuff that I've learned since this time or since then, because I've become heavily involved in the study of reincarnation and speaking all over the world, really, on the subject, mostly through telling the story, but then getting into that piece. So as far as this issue is concerned, we were cleaning up after Hurricane Lily, and in my backyard, we're just raking up the branches and leaves and stuff like that, and we had a staircase that went up to the second story of a building that was behind my house. And I said, come on over here and sit down and just sit on my knees. I want to love on you. You're such a great little boy, and I love you to bits. And it was also a way to keep him from scattering the leaves all over the yard as I was raking them up.
Sure.
And so he hops up on my lap. I said, I love you to bits. You're such a good boy. And he looked at me and said, Daddy, he says, I knew, that's why I picked you. I knew you'd be a good daddy. I said, you picked me? He said, yeah. Yeah, when I found you and Mommy, I picked you. I said, where were we when you picked us? He said, you were in a big pink hotel in Hawaii having dinner on the beach at night. Well, in 1997, that was our fifth anniversary, and we went to Hawaii to celebrate our fifth anniversary. And we stayed at a big pink hotel in Oahu right on the beach, and I had a romantic dinner that night out on the beach underneath a little tent. And I was dumbfounded. I said, you know, we went to Hawaii several months earlier. She said, no, this was just you and Mommy. Because we had gone to Hawaii in 2002 when I had, we had sold the company. And so to celebrate the sale of the company, we took a vacation. And he said, no, it was just you and Mommy. Well, that was 6 weeks before he was conceived, or 6 or 7 weeks before he was conceived. And there's no way he knew. Never knew we were there.
That is absolutely extraordinary. We've been talking with Bruce Leininger. You could read this whole incredible story of what he and his wife and his son James went through in their exploration of this in his book, Soul Survivor, The Reincarnation of a World War II Fighter Pilot. Bruce, what is James like now? What's he up to these days? And what kind of memories, if any, does he still have of James Houston Jr.?
Well, the memories essentially went away by the time he was 7 or 8. There were every once in a while I have some incidental recollection of something. But then again, because there's been so much activity about this, that it's hard to tell whether it's just playing on his mind or it really is something that he recalls happening. He is in the U.S. Army, and he is in the 82nd Airborne Division.
Wow. So that love of airplanes is not something that ever waned, even if his memories of World War II did. That's incredible. Well, good luck to him. Now, just there are going to be folks in our audience that are going to wonder, especially since you mentioned your father served in World War II. Could he have been picking up cues about any of this stuff from you or anyone else in your family, your wife's family?
No, that was, you know, first of all, the amount of information that was is out there about this type of ship in World War II is minimal. There's really been, there's only ever been a couple books that I actually bought well after I got engaged in this story so I could learn more about what happened. But there was nothing that we, you know, he was watching Teletubbies and Sesame Street. You know, he wasn't watching the war in the Pacific or whatever. You know, I didn't watch that stuff. That didn't mean I wasn't interested in it. You know, I had an interest in some of this because of my father's military experience. But it was nothing that, you know, there were no books laying around. And he was two. Are you going to read a book about
it? Right, right, exactly. He didn't even know how to read at that point.
That's right, that's right.
And, you know, in doing some research and in talking about your situation on the air, I did get a few emails from several purported debunkers who said that it's not the case. It's not as fantastic as I made it sound and as the Netflix series made it sound. They claimed that James's mother, your wife, reached out to the author of a book that she had read years earlier on past life regression, Carol Bowman, who then told your wife that he was probably a dead pilot and to reinforce it to your son. Is there any truth to that at all, Bruce?
Okay. The book and information about Carol Bowman was we were mystified and troubled by the amount of and the number of times that he would have these nightmares. And Andrea's mother actually gave Andrea the book by Carol Bowman, okay? Probably, it would have been somewhere maybe in September, October time frame of 2000. So Andrea was not, didn't study this subject. Now, what Andrea did was she spoke with Carol because Carol would provide counseling to children who were having traumatic behaviors or experiences because of these past life memories. So she gave Andrea some tips about how to help James, how to soften his the intensity of his nightmares. And the counseling went something like this: James, this did not happen to you. You're just remembering something that happened to someone else. That was in a thumbnail what the guidance was. And so that's what she told him several times. You know, I never said it to him. I didn't even know what Andrea and Carol were talking about. Because I wasn't the least bit. All I was concerned about was how was he? That was one. And then two, I was also working 70 hours a week because the company I was working for was going to go public on the stock market. And that was why I was hired by them to help that process. So I was just alarmed by what was going on with him because it was traumatic. You know, it was troubling to see a child having these nightmares four, five, six nights a week. You know, it was almost every night. So, Carol Bowman was someone that provided some guidance to Andrea, but there was never anything about him that I ever heard. I never heard anything like that.
Sure.
Now, I appreciate those people that are skeptical too, because I was skeptical. And what was confounding was as I found information relative to something he said, there was nothing that he ever said that was at odds with the facts.
Interesting. Interesting.
So that's what becomes compelling. And that's what forced me to deal with this, because the facts kept given me information that I didn't like. Like you said, he flew a Corsair. Well, a Corsair never flew off at Natoma Bay. Well, we found out later after we found the family that he had been a pilot in a squadron called VF-301, and that squadron test flew Corsairs, which is what qualified them for use in the war in the Pacific.
Wow. That's incredible. Okay. Incredible. Let me end with this, Bruce, because we're just about out of time. How common are the – I'm sure all sorts of other people have reached out to you with their own stories after your story became public and after you wrote your book. How common do you think these instances of reincarnation are? Is it a situation where most children are someone that's reincarnated or where it's essentially one in a million or one in a thousand? How common do you think this sort of thing is, Bruce?
Well, I think it's much more common than we want to let on. First of all, you just have to – listen, you know, what are children saying? They have imaginary friends. They adopt strange behaviors that are unexplainable, or they talk about things that they could have never witnessed. I think it's a fairly common occurrence, much more common than we want to generally accept, because we're not, first of all, our culture, although it's changing, I believe there's more people that believe in it now than used to, and our story has helped with some of that. But the issue is you just have to examine, you almost have to go on faith, okay? My trail toward this, as far as how common could it be, was distilled into a real brief description of, as a Christian, I was taught that our souls go on forever. Heaven is a place we go for eternity. But no one was ever able to explain to me in any adequate way is, well, what happens when you get there? So you get to heaven. So as far as reincarnation is concerned, there are large groups of people that believe that it is a very frequent occurrence. And I tend to agree with it only because there's more and more evidence, like that series that you saw on Netflix. Okay, there's more and more. It's not just anecdotal evidence. It's people giving you facts about things that they can remember that they shouldn't, that there's no way they should know about
sure.
it.
Sure. Bruce.
I mean, how can it to you? Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I could talk with you all day, and I hope we can do this again in the future.
Absolutely.
Because this is a subject our listeners are very interested in. Yeah. I am, too. I appreciate you taking the time this evening.
Yep, and I'd be happy to come back and get more into that spiritual journey we're all on.
I'm going to take you up on that within the next couple of weeks, if you don't mind. That'd be great. Bruce Leininger, author of the book Soul Survivor. If you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you can give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Straight ahead.
You're hearing things on 77 WABC. Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take ya. Bermuda, Bahama, come on, baby, mama. Key Largo, Montego, baby, why don't we go?
The Beach Boys. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. How fascinating was that discussion, Bruce Leininger? Wow. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. If you want to really give your energy levels a kickstart, you need to think about getting some life change tea. Now, you might be asking, what exactly is Life Change Tea? Well, you can learn more about it if you go to the website getthetea.com. It's a great product. I drink it every day. It's a cold tea. I drink 2 8-ounce glasses every day. It's easy to mix. You throw 2 bags of tea into some water. Then you throw your concentrate into a big 1 gallon container and you fill the rest of that container with more water. I throw a little lemon juice in there and a little Splenda in there just for some added flavor, and it does wonders for your digestive tract. If you ever feel constipated, if you ever feel bloated, Life Change Tea helps a great deal with that stuff. So if you want to check it out, go to the website getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And to use the promo code Frank when you order, you'll get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in the United States. It's getthetea.com, promo code Frank. And they sell a whole bunch of other great products on there, pine bark extract, materials for, you know, your immune system, digestive system, your heart, whatever you're in need of health, of improving health wise, you can check it out at getthetea.com. And if you use the promo code Frank, you'll get free shipping anywhere in these United States. And if you live outside the United States, well, then you have to pay for shipping, but it's still worth it. It's a great product, and one container lasts you for a long time. I think about a whole month. So check it out. GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. So I am a fan of The Sopranos, and my wife is now watching the series for the first time, which is great because it's sort of like I'm able to watch the series through her eyes for the first time and see the things that she's surprised by and the things that she wonders about. So I thought it would be fun to interview Steven Van Zandt to talk about his new book. He's got a new book out. And so I asked our executive producer, Jennifer Grodd, to try and schedule an interview with him. And I don't think they ever got back to her, but they did send her a book. But before I knew that they were sending her a book, I saw two terrific interviews that he did with Michael Smirkanish, one on his radio show, one on his TV show. And I thought, that's great. And I was talking about it with my wife. She didn't realize that Steven Van Zandt was Little Steven from Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band or E Street Orchestra. And so she seemed really interested in this. So I don't want her to watch these interviews yet because the interviews that I saw, at least the radio interview, gave away some spoilers from The Sopranos that she's not up to. But we ended up talking about it at my dad's for Sunday dinner. And my stepmother seemed interested in a lot of things that he revealed, like, for instance, the fact that he was originally supposed to play Tony Soprano and all sorts of other things. So I said, all right, let me go. Since they're not sending us a copy of the book, let me order a copy of the book for my stepmother. So I ordered it. And then today, lo and behold, I learned that they sent us a copy of the book. So maybe he will do an interview, but now I have two copies of the book. So what I'm thinking is I'll give one to my stepmother, one to my wife. And if the interview happens, I'll use the copy they sent me to prepare for it. So it's a nice problem to have, although I wish I would have known about it a day before. Save the copy of the book. Keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Well, speaking of death, there's a fascinating article that I came across this week, which is that a new blood test foretells a person's risk of death within the next 10 years. But I guess the question that comes with it, other than if you run a life insurance company, who would want to know? So in the largest study of its kind, researchers identified 14 biomarkers that together appear to predict all-cause mortality risk, meaning the likelihood of dying. Now, it's not the first experimental, quote-unquote, death test, but this new tool that may in the future foretell a person's risk of dying within the next 5 to 10 years with considerable accuracy is the closest so far to a blood test to predict when the bottom will fall out. Now, bioethicist Arthur Kaplan, who I've interviewed many times, who's been one of my favorite guests. He's not usually somebody that enjoys staying up late, so I may have to have him on to talk about this. Maybe we'll pre-record something. But he said in an email, you may say, don't tell me the time of my death, but your doctor may know. Your bank may demand to know, as may your creditors. Because after all, if you know you're dying in 5 years, maybe you'll run up your credit card bill and not pay it back. Even admission to medical school or pilot training may require disclosure because there are huge implications of this. So this team, led by researchers in at a medical school in the Netherlands, said they've identified 14 biomarkers, biological molecules circulating in blood that together appear to predict all-cause mortality, the likelihood of dying of any death in the not-too-distant future. The molecules are involved in various processes, including the transportation of fat in the blood, fluid balance, and inflammation. Although, this is what the team wrote, quote, although the majority of these biomarkers have been associated with mortality before, this is the first study that shows their independent effect when combined into one model. The study is the largest of its kind to date. It was based on blood samples taken from 44,168 people of European descent who were part of 12 cohort studies and who ranged in age from 18 to 109 when they gave their first blood. The follow-up time ranged from 3 to nearly 17 years. In all, of the 44,000 people that they studied, 5,512 of them died during the follow-up. So the team searched for links between levels of 226 different biomarkers in the blood of the living and the dead. So to test which set was optimally associated with mortality, they began with 63 candidates. 14 stood out. Some, such as the ratio of polyunsaturated fatty acids to total fatty acids, appeared to be linked with a lower risk of dying, while the opposite was true for others, such as elevated glucose. So then it goes through the science of this. But the point is, these researchers seem to have developed a blood test, a death blood test. A blood test which at this point may be nowhere near ready for the real world, but might in the foreseeable future be something that we have access to. So my question for you is, if you could take this blood test and know, as a result of this blood test, the likelihood of your dying within the next 5 to 10 years, would you want to know? 800-848-WABC. I've been going back and forth with this ever since I saw this story. And ultimately, I think I've come down on the side of I would want to know if I'm going to die within the next 5 to 10 years. Would you? 800-848-9222. Now, once this blood test is ready, whether you want to know or not, your insurance company is going to want to know. I guarantee you they may make this a condition of your life insurance test. You know, the life insurance physical that you need to get where they weigh you and you urinate and you take your blood. I bet you this is a stone's throw away from being a part of what they consider as they set your life insurance rates. But if you had access to this, would you want to know? 800-848-WABC. You're still welcome to comment on my discussion with Bruce Leininger as well. I know we didn't have much time for phone calls, but if you want to talk about Bruce Leininger and that whole discussion, you're welcome to as well. 800-848-9222. Celeste is in Rockaway. Hello, Celeste.
Yes, hello. I have two things to say. First of all, about knowing when you're going to die, I think that's the worst thing that could ever happen to a person. I think that's such a bad thing. I'm sorry. It's pessimistic, you know.
Well,
at least 100.
Again, I mean, it's not going to tell you if you're going to get hit by a car or shot in the head.
I don't know.
This, it will only tell you if, based on the biomarkers in your blood, you're likely to die within the next 5 to 10 years.
I don't want
to
know that. I don't want to know that.
I think a lot of people feel that way, Celeste.
But wait, like I also was calling about what I thought was a dream for a long time until I learned about reincarnation. And what happened to me is I remember seeing myself very little, looking through a cloud and seeing my mother and father. This was in 1952, seeing my mother and father in an old-fashioned car. I don't know what kind of car it was, like a black car. And my sister, who was about, would have been two then, sitting on my mother's lap, and they were dressed like people from 1952.
And then all of a sudden, my father stopped the car. My mother got out of the car and took my sister, held her hand. It was very, very exact, held her hand, and they walked into, like, the country. And I said to myself, they look like a nice family. I'd like to maybe, you know, I like them. They look nice. They don't look real rich or anything or any sense special, but they seem nice, and I think I want to go live with them. And all my life, I thought it was just a dream until I hear other people had stories that way, too, where they looked through a cloud or they saw themselves as an angel. And so now I believe that. And I had other dreams, too, but I can't get into that.
So you believe that you were reincarnated, that you had a previous life?
No, I don't think I had a reincarnation. No, not at all. I believe that I was in heaven. And I've read stories about that too, that you can, you're, in other words, you're picking where you want to live. And there were other, I read things that some people would pick to be in a poor country or where there's a lot of turmoil, or they want to, be born with some kind of disability because they want to, it's just what they want to do in life. But I've heard other people say the same thing, that it's like, and the man who was just talking, he had said that his son had said he saw his mother and father and said, they look like nice people. I want to live with them. So when I've talked, you know, sometimes I was floored. I never told anyone about this because I just thought it was a dream. I had other things happen to me, too, where when I was a little kid, my friends and I, we were neighbors, and we were all fighting and yelling and saying horrible things to each other. Drop dead, hate you, you know, horrible things. Little kids saying, you know, whatever. And all of a sudden, and this was, you know, in the city, and we were playing in the driveway, and all of a sudden, this man, who to me, I didn't know, looked like a priest. And later on, I saw a picture, was really like a bishop. He had on, like, a certain kind of hat on his head. He was a young man, dark hair, like, certain kind of rounded hat with a white banner and, like, a cape. Anyway, I thought he was a priest. All of a sudden, while we're all fighting and yelling and screaming, he comes walking up the driveway. And we just, like, stopped dead in our feet, you know, stopped dead and, like, we're shocked. Like, who is this person walking, you know, on the sidewalk and then coming up the driveway? And he said, you know, you children shouldn't be fighting like that and yelling at each other. You know, God loves children. He wants you to be happy. So don't fight. And we said, I remember saying, oh, okay, okay. And he walked away. And, you know, remember, God loves you. He loves children. He wants you to be happy. And he walks away, and we all look at each other. We say, okay, we won't fight anymore. Now, my whole life, I believed this really happened. I believed it happened. 50 years go by, and I go to a reunion with the same people who live next door to us. We grew up with them since we were babies. I said, remember that time when the priest came walking up the driveway and told us to stop fighting? And they said, what are you talking about? I said, you remember? He had the black cape on and everything. And, like, we were saying horrible things to each other, like, you know, drop dead and I hate you and your mother this. Horrible. We're little kids, like 5 years old. And they said, what are you talking about? And I was like, and everybody was there, the neighbors, and said, that never happened. So what are you talking? And they said, no, you're crazy. And I said, no, then it wasn't a dream. And so I believe that they came in, you know, I've had other.
Well, so who do you think that was?
I think it was definitely an angel.
Wow.
Because, first of all, I was so little then. I didn't even go to, you know, catechism or anything like that. And I just assumed he was a priest because I saw a priest in church, but realized it was more like I saw a picture.
Well, is it possible, though, Celeste, that you were just the only person to remember it?
No, because picture yourself as a little kid and, you know, you're in your own little world and screaming and yelling. And this was in the city. And, it just was so strange. And we never seen anybody walking down the sidewalk, walking past our houses looking like that. We didn't, you know. Believe me, I know in my heart that it was an angel, because I had other things happen to me,
wow,
too.
Well, that's wild, Celeste. It sounds like angels are on your side. That's great to know. Thank you for sharing that. 800-848-WABC, talking reincarnation, specifically the discussion that I just had with Bruce Leininger about his son being a reincarnated World War II fighter pilot. Were you convinced? I found it pretty interesting. 800-848-WABC. Also, talking about this new blood test, this death blood test, which could apparently, with a fair degree of accuracy, tell you whether or not you're going to die within the next 5 to 10 years. My question for you is, would you want to know? That's 800-848-9222. The biomarkers singled out by this team of researchers represent only a fraction of the metabolites in human blood. However, they identified 10 more than those found by an earlier group in 2014. Other scientists, meanwhile, are developing blood tests to determine who's aging faster than normal. So Arthur Kaplan, one of the nation's leading bioethicists, says ever since the invention of astrology, humans have either been desperate to know when they will die or eager to find ways to beat the prediction. Life insurance is devoted to the prediction of customer deaths and very good at it. Doctors, however, are notoriously poor at predicting prognosis. So improving predictions is inevitable and something ethically we need to come to grips with. That's what Art Kaplan says. If you could know, would you want to know? 800-848-9222. My answer, especially having a child in just over a month, my answer, I think, is yes. You want to know how much time you have to be at certain life events. I think it would affect my planning over the course of the next 5-10 years. I do. There was an episode of News Radio where that was the case, where Phil Hartman's character, Bill McNeil, meets a psychic, and the psychic tells him he's going to die on such and such a date. And it changes his whole philosophy of how he lives his life. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Tom in the Bronx. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, hiya, Frank. Hiya, Tom. I'd like to say this guy with his kid that was reincarnated air pilot. Was that from India? Was that the story?
No, Louisiana. They live in Louisiana.
No, you know why? Because there's an identical story from India about a kid that was born after World War II, and he started to talk to his mother, a family, about the pilots that flew from India during the war. They were stationed over there. And the ones that passed on.
Yeah, well, again, as I said, if you watch the show Surviving Death on Netflix, Tom, there's all sorts of stories similar to this. This you just had to listen to what I said.
Anyway,
you don't have to watch it. There's all sorts of stories similar to the story of James Leininger and James Houston III. This is just the one that I found most compelling.
Yeah, get this. This India story is concerned. The surviving pilots were having a reunion, and every time they had the reunion, they had this kid there. This kid came to the reunion and started to tell them about stories about the pilots they were with. It's incredible.
It is. It's pretty fascinating, Tom. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. 6 open lines now if you want to jump on board. That's 1-800-848-9222. We're going to be joined by Ray Tierney. He's the Republican candidate for Suffolk County District Attorney. He's going to tell us a little bit about why he's running for DA and why he'd be a better choice than the Democrat that's running, Tim Sinney. We'll talk with him. If you want to participate on social media, you can find me on Twitter @Frank Morano. That's Frank, Morano. Or you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. If you are on Facebook, we would encourage you to join our Facebook group. Our just type in Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. And you can participate in the subjects that we cover on the show. Every day, I have to end up declining some posts in that Facebook group because there are people that try to post content that's not relevant to the show, that has nothing to do with anything we've covered on the show. It's, you know, a random news article or this or that. There are so many different forums for that. Don't use our Facebook group for that. You know, post it on your own Facebook timeline and have your people comment on it. You know, no need to try to invade ours. Keep ours related to subjects that we cover on the show. 800-848-WABC, six open lines if you want to jump on board. Carol is in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi there, Frank. That was such an emotional interview with Bruce Leininger.
Thank you.
I mean, I actually got a little teary-eyed. I had an experience myself when I was a teenager. I had a recurring dream that I was a nurse during the Civil War.
Mm.
And I had several dreams. The first one, I was assisting in the amputation of the soldier's leg. And the other dreams, there were other things, you know, like bullet wounds and, you know, all kinds of maladies, things that went on. But I had no fear of it. Absolutely. I never had any kind of fear about having these dreams. And then I went to England for the first time when I was 18 years old. My parents actually sent me there as a graduation present. And the night that I came home from that trip, I was sleeping and I woke up all of a sudden and a Union officer came gliding through my living room and disappeared into the fireplace.
You're kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. I saw it for real.
Wow. My goodness. That's wild. Now, obviously, Carol, people have dreams all the time about things. How do you know it wasn't just a dream?
I don't think so, because it was recurring too often, I would say.
Interesting. Well, that is pretty fascinating, Carol. Thank you very much for the call and for the feedback on the interview.
Thank you, Frank.
Appreciate it. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we're covering. E. Frank is in Astoria. Hello, E. Frank.
Yes, good morning, Frank. I'm very serious about what's going to happen tonight with Curtis Lewa and Eric Adams. Most people don't support the mayoral race here in the city because they're not city residents or they're not concerned about the future of the city or whatever the case might be in general. I'm a little bit angry because it's coming down to a situation where this is now the reincarnation and revisiting of the Rocky II movie between Rocky Balboa and whatever.
Apollo Creed.
Apollo,
yeah.
Creed. I think this is senseless. Eric Adams is dodging the issues. He is acting like a hen, like a roosting eagle, waiting for election day to get all the votes and take all the mayoralty. And I noticed that there are no major endorsements for Curtis Lewa. He has sacrificed himself over 40 years fighting crime. You might say that Eric Adams sacrificed himself and put his line on line as a transit police sergeant. But this is ridiculous. You see, Eric Adams is not even talking about many of the major issues that are affecting. He's just waiting to win the election.
All right, E. Frank, thank you. We're going to get into the mayor's race tomorrow, probably in the 2 a.m. hour. So those of you that want to comment on the mayor's race, we are going to get into that tomorrow around 2 a.m. 800-848-WABC. Carolyn is in Ohio. Hello, Carolyn.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
I was calling when my youngest daughter was 2. We were at a motel swimming pool while my husband was working, and I was dragging her through the water by her arms like you do with little kids. And she looked up at me and she said, I used to do this with my other mother. And I said, what did you say? And she said, I used to do this with my other mother when I was a little boy. And
your daughter said that to you?
Yes.
And she was 2 at the time.
She was 2.
Wow.
Yes. And so that got me interested in reincarnation, and I began to study it. I had never even thought about it before. She's 45 today, and she has totally forgotten all about it. And she laughs when I talk to her about it. And but, you know, it's just that we weren't raised with the subject of reincarnation. You know, it's not in our culture to believe in it. But other cultures, like the man was talking about, India, you know, they take that for granted. And so a lot of their kids remember, and the people believe them, and they look up the families, like your interview with the man that wrote the book about his son.
Do you have any theory as to who your daughter was in a previous life?
No, but I just remember her as being little, and she would – I have two other daughters that are older, and my youngest daughter would come up to me and hug me around my legs and say, "Mommy, you're so nice, you're so nice." And it always gave me the feeling like maybe her previous mother hadn't been as nice. But that's as far as it went with her story. That's what she remembered and told me. And she was my tomboy, which was fun, you know. And I don't know. It gets you thinking.
It certainly does, Carolyn. It certainly does. I appreciate you sharing that story and that perspective with us, Carolyn.
Yes, and I'd like to mention the other topic, too. My husband died of cancer about 7 years ago. That's all right. It was about 7 years ago, but he was told he had small cell lung cancer and maybe 6 months to live, 6 to 10 months. And the whole time, we just, every day it was a countdown. It was horrible.
So
it was just,
if you
want to know,
through the prism of hindsight, if you could do it all over again, you and your husband, would you have chosen not to know when he would have passed?
We didn't have the choice. They just gave us that information routinely. And yes, in hindsight, I would not want to know.
Interesting. All right, Carolyn, thank you for your perspective. 800-848-9222. Jesse is in Brooklyn. Hello, Jesse.
Hey, how you doing? So a little incarnation story with a twist. So this guy was with his family at a reunion, and suddenly he burst out crying. So he just can't deal with it anymore. They're all adults at this point. And so since he's a kid, he's been having nightmares about he's in the house, and the Nazis took his father away already at that point. And a neighbor came knocking on the door, told him it's time to hide, and they came to get the kids and then the mother. And he was supposed to run. He didn't make it. They caught him. And they caught him and his siblings and his sister, and they threw him all into a truck, you know, to take him away. And I'm leaving out all the details because I don't want to get anything wrong. But bottom line is, he had the story his whole life, and he had nightmares, and he just said he can't deal with it anymore, and he's been crying in front of his family. But his sister, one of his sisters, was more shocked than the rest, because that his nightmare ended right there. She had the same nightmare, but it continued where he left off.
What do you mean? He had this. She had the same.
She remembered. Her nightmares were after they took them into the truck and took them down to Auschwitz or whatever concentration camp they took them to.
Wow. Well, that's pretty wild. So what do you make of that, Jesse?
A lot of stuff we don't understand.
Yeah, that's for sure. 800-848-9222. Mark is in New Haven. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Frank. Sid the genius. Digit not somebody else.
Beg your pardon?
Anyway, Sid the genius. Sid the genius.
Got it.
But the also, I'm the producer of Charlie's Christmas Wish, and I wanted to let you know that we're going to put it in theaters for a special fundraising event for homeless vets. I'll keep you informed.
Oh, great. Please do. Please do. I enjoyed the film very much.
Thanks. So the other thing I wanted to say is that life is precious, and very few of us realize how precious it is. And 50 years ago, I was working in a bookstore, and I sold a book called Be Here Now, written by a guy from Harvard who rebranded himself as the Baba Ram Dass. I never read the book, but I got everything I needed from the title. You have to be here now, every day, every moment. All those people in Miami in June went to bed Thursday night thinking they were going to wake up, and they didn't. So you got to enjoy everything every day.
That's truer words never spoken, Mark. I very much appreciate the call. Keep us posted on that film. Thank you. All right, we're going to talk with Ray Tierney. He's the Republican candidate for Suffolk County District Attorney. Joins us next. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Well, you called me up this morning, told me about the new love you found. I said, I'm happy for you. I'm really happy for you. Found someone else. I guess I won't be coming round. I guess it's over, baby. It's really over, baby. Whoa. And from what you said, I know you've gotten over me.
That's Chicago singing Look Away. I've never been the biggest Chicago fan, but whatever. Different strokes for different folks. So at this point, we're scheduled to speak with the Republican candidate for district attorney in Suffolk County, Ray Tierney. And evidently, according to Matt and Molly, he is not answering his phone and his voicemail is full. So apparently it looks like he might be no showing us here. So I don't know about you, but if I were a Suffolk County voter and a guy asking to be the top law enforcement official in the county had made an appointment for a radio interview and on a radio show that a lot of candidates are struggling to get on, I'm deluged every day with requests from candidates, and I put very few of them on, and he can't be bothered to keep that appointment. I don't know about you, but that would certainly affect my decision about who to vote for in Suffolk County. I mean, if he can't be bothered to keep an appointment, how can he be trusted to, I don't know, run an office and administer an office effectively? Certainly something I would take into consideration. That's all I'm saying. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. It's just as well. I've got a lot of other stuff to get to as well. Hey, there was an interesting story from space.com, which is a terrific, terrific website. And it has to do with some bizarre things that the Hubble Space Telescope has been seeing. And this bizarre double galaxy has been caused by a ripple in space. So astronomers believe they've solved at long last a mystery first discovered nearly 10 years ago by the Hubble Space Telescope. This dilemma centered on a strange double galaxy, a pair of streaky objects that once defied explanations. Now, scientists think that the objects are actually one distant galaxy that appears as two thanks to a ripple in the fabric of space that's magnifying and distorting its image. So from Earth, the doubled object, the doubled objects almost 11 billion light years away look like mirror images of one another. When astronomers first saw them in 2013, they immediately suspected a case of gravitational lensing, which is a phenomenon that occurs when light from a faraway object is warped like an image through a fishbowl by the gravity of something else between that object and the observer. But now, that answered the how, but not the what or the why. So Hubble has glimpsed quite a few gravitationally lensed objects in its time, and this one was more than a mere warp. Gravitational lensing was somehow not just magnifying the galaxy, but also copying it, creating two bright images as well as a fainter third copy that can also be seen in the image. After years of pondering this problem, astronomers have finally pinpointed the culprit. A large, uncatalogued cluster of galaxies sits between Hubble and the object. That's about 7 billion light years from Earth. In addition, the lensed galaxy happens to sit upon a sort of ripple in space that's caused by the gravity of densely packed dark matter. That's the mysterious stuff that makes up about 85% of the matter in the universe. So the extra images were produced when light from the distant galaxy passed through the foreground cluster along this ripple. So it's pretty interesting. Whenever you're dealing with other galaxies and dark matter, it becomes pretty interesting. I'm going to have to ask Dr. Sky about it the next time he's on the show, but I think it's pretty interesting anyway. I'm going to post the article from space.com on my Facebook page. If you want to read it, just go to facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. So tonight, as I mentioned, is the first official debate with Curtis Sliwa and Eric Adams. I'm hoping to watch that, but I have an interesting evening scheduled this evening. My sister-in-law, and again, I have 8 siblings-in-law, so one of them is always doing something. My sister-in-law is moving to an apartment in Toms River, New Jersey. So she currently lives in another part of New Jersey. And my wife has decided she's going to give her one of our couches, the couch that we keep in my office that my wife takes frequent naps on, and the cats love hiding beneath when there's thunder, and also an old kitchen table, which we inherited from my wife's uncle that we no longer use because I did a yeoman's job putting together the kitchen table that's now in our kitchen, although the bottom piece of it is sort of upside down, but nobody notices that except for my wife. Now, my wife had volunteered me, and I'm happy to help, had volunteered me to help pack this couch into the U-Haul that my sister-in-law Deborah has rented to take the couch. Now, it's a large couch, so at the very least, it's a 2-person job. And it's really probably realistically a 3-person job, but you could get by with 2, I think. Especially, I've moved quite a few couches in my day, so I can handle it. So I reached out to all sorts of people. I reached out to both of my brothers. I reached out to all of my Eltingville neighbors. I reached out to all of my other brothers-in-law that are in the East Coast to see who could help. So far, only my friend Tommy Barlotta has agreed to help me move this couch into the U-Haul. Now, this is all contingent upon my sister-in-law arriving at my house on time, which is supposed to be around 5 p.m. So Tommy and I are going to load this couch and this table into the U-Haul. Then Tommy's work ends with my thanks. He helped us move into our last apartment as well. He's always there for me. Great guy. And then I am going to travel to Toms River with Deborah and then unload the couch. Now, I am working on finding someone else in Toms River that can help me unload this couch in Toms River. So far, I have one friend named Kyle who lives in Toms River. I've asked him. He might be able to help. And then I have another friend, Kyle, who used to live in Toms River. Apparently, there's a lot of Kyles in Toms River. They're thinking of renaming the town from Toms River to Kyle's Town. So my friend Kyle O'Brien does not live there anymore, but he's working on getting me a person in Toms River who's able to help. So hopefully one of the Kyles can come through to help me unload this couch in Toms River. Otherwise, I don't know what we're doing. Because it is at minimum a 2-person job, and I'm not going to ask Tommy Barlotta to make the trip all the way out to Toms River. So if you live in Toms River and you want to help me move this couch tonight, we may need your help. So you can email me frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. I got an email from someone, Dave, who writes of Ray Tierney's No Show this morning, that he might have taken the Life Change tea and then gotten stuck on the toilet. Well, I don't think that's the case, Dave, and I'll tell you why. Because with Life Change tea, you don't get stuck on the toilet. Everything happens very quickly and in short order. So it's not as if you did not take Life Change tea, then I could see you being stuck on the toilet. But, you know, you wouldn't do that. That wouldn't be the case if you were drinking Life Change tea. So that's my exciting Wednesday. I'm hoping that we can get this all wrapped up, get the couch loaded into this U-Haul, driven to Toms River, unloaded in Toms River, and then get me back to Staten Island in time to watch this debate with Curtis Sliwa and Eric Adams. That is my aspirational goal. We'll see how that comes to fruition. And that's why it only adds to my frustration that that debate is not on the radio, because I'd love to listen to it on the radio on the way home. And now I'm out of luck. I'm out of luck. I don't know what went on with the campaign finance board, why there's no radio sponsor for this debate. So I can't imagine that nobody asked. I'm sure someone did. So I don't know what the story is there. I'm going to investigate that. Oh, by the way, before we move on, there's one, you know, I like to explore a variety of conspiracy theories on this show. And there's one conspiracy theory related to the television show Jeopardy that I wanted to run by you. And I confess, it's not something that I had thought of, but this is, you know, I was at my dad's for dinner on Sunday, and this is something that my stepmother came up with. And she believes it. She was not doing shtick. She believes this. So we all know that Matt Amodio had the second longest Jeopardy winning streak in history, but second only to Ken Jennings. He longer than James Holzhauer, and he was tearing it up. It looked unbeatable. And then all of a sudden, 6 days ago, Jonathan Fisher beats Matt Amodio. And Jonathan Fisher, I didn't see last night, but I'm assuming he won last night too. Jonathan Fisher has been there ever since. Now, remember, what was going on before the Matt Amodio and during the Matt Amodio winning streak with respect to Jeopardy? Well, you remember all the controversy that was happening with the host. Who's going to host the show? Is it Mayim Bialik? Is it Ken Jennings? Is it that producer? So then they announce that they're going to give it to the producer. Now, I love that I can't even remember this guy's name now. This guy was the cock of the walk 3 months ago, and now his name's forgotten by me, who has a pretty good memory. And so they were going to give it to this producer, and then the producer gets canceled. They bring out some old podcast comments that he made 25 years ago, something that he did when he was working on The Price is Right 15 years ago, and they decide that because of these old comments and this old Price is Right behavior, that he can no longer be the host of Jeopardy, a show that basically requires you to read clues and say correct or incorrect. Apparently making some remarks about how women look on a podcast 10 years ago, that disqualifies you from reading and saying correct or incorrect. So, but anyway, there was a lot of controversy related to the drama around the host. So what my stepmother's theory was is that they kept putting easy people against Matt Amodio, people that really weren't in his league, so that he could build up this winning streak. So that, you know, the story on Jeopardy was, oh my goodness, Matt Amodio is breaking all sorts of records. Will he be the next Ken Jennings? He's already beat James Holzhauer. And then, because she pointed out, as soon as you put him against people that actually know what they're doing, like this Jonathan Fisher, who's still on the show, who seems like a very smart guy, and not nearly as socially awkward as Matt Amodio. And I like, we have the same hair, Jonathan Fisher and me, so I'm kind of rooting for him. But as soon as you put Matt Amodio against regular people, I mean, smart people, he loses. He folds like a cheap camera. So her theory was they did this intentionally to stack the deck to allow him to build up a winning streak. You know, almost like a Harlem Globetrotters kind of thing. Everybody's watching. What will Matt Amodio do? You know, it's like, you know, when Andre the Giant was defeated for all those years. You know, I mean, actually, that's a poor example because wrestling is, the outcomes are predetermined. But you get the picture. It's like, they do that in boxing. You know, Don King, he wanted Mike Tyson to build up this huge winning streak. So he would put him up against tomato cans like Peter McNeely, who could never beat Mike Tyson. and allows him to build up this big, big winning streak. Do you think the Jeopardy producers did that same thing? 800-848-WABC. I'm not endorsing that theory. And we have Matt Imodio on the list of people that we're going to try and get as a guest on this show. So I will ask him about it. But I don't think it's the craziest thing that I've heard, honestly. So tell me what you think. I know a lot of you are Jeopardy fans. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Also, I want to give a shout out to one of my favorite listeners and somebody that has become a very good friend. She is she's in the hospital. She's unfortunately in the hospital. She's dealing with some ailments, and she said, you know, she thankfully has her app on her phone to keep her company, and she's listening to us every day. Not sure how much longer she's going to stay there, but it could be ultimately another few weeks, which we're sorry about. But I want to give a shout out to one of my favorite listeners, Janice Grossman, who not only is a listener, but is a very good friend. She and her longtime companion, Tom, they come to all my stuff, even the stuff that nobody comes to. You know, the random cocktail outings that I do, they come. New Year's Eve, they come. They've been over, you know, over our house. They're really good friends and good people. And we're big fans of Tom and Janice. And I hate to hear that Janice is in the hospital, but I'm glad that she has a radio or at least an app to keep her company. So we're wishing her a speedy recovery, and we're sending a lot of positive vibes her way, along with a lot of prayers as well. So wishing her the best, and along with anybody that you know that is you know in ill health at the moment. But I have to say, it's always sad when someone is sick. But it's much sadder when someone that listens to this show is sick, because we need the listeners of this show to be as healthy and strong as possible. Those are the people that we care the most about. I hate to be so crass, but that's the truth. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. We'll continue with your calls. Wide open lines. Eight open lines if you want to jump on board. 800-848-WABC. Straight ahead.
WABC.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run in on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We looked down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum.
This is actually a great song selection by our own Matt Sapienza. This is the Battle of New Orleans by Johnny Horton. Been recorded by many other artists. But you don't see a lot of songs about the Battle of New Orleans, do you? But this was the most popular version back in 1959. Battle of New Orleans took place in which war, Matt Sapienza?
That was the Civil War.
That was not the Civil War.
What?
That was not.
War of 1812.
Very good.
See, you hear Molly
I thought
in the
Molly
back.
Being in a different room now, she wouldn't be able to help you with these answers, but apparently she can. What's significant about the Battle of New Orleans and War of 1812?
God.
Pete, you can answer too.
Yeah, Pete, help me out with this.
What am I looking
for? What's okay, significant yeah. about the Battle of New Orleans?
Wasn't that Andrew Jackson's big?
That's right. But what was so significant about it?
Turn your mic on.
It is on.
I'll be honest, I don't know it beyond Andrew Jackson.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I'm not a smart guy.
That's not true. That's not true. Everybody's smart in different ways. Molly, do you have you can come in here if you want. Do you have an answer to what was so significant about the Battle of New Orleans?
No.
All right. Well, okay. Well, I'm impressed that you knew what war it was. That's more than can be said for a lot of people. All right. The Battle of New Orleans is significant because it took place after the war was over, but they didn't know. They didn't know it was over. So they fought anyway, even though the war was over. Very interesting. And actually, Brian Kilmeade has a great book out about it. It's a couple of years old, but it's still worth reading. 800-848-9222. Diane is in Brooklyn. Hello, Diane.
Hey, Frank. I was sitting here bopping in my wheelchair to that song.
It's a great song, isn't it?
Yes, it's a wonderful song. The oldies are good. Frank, I wanted to talk to you about this Matamodio thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they want to build up his winnings that high? Why would they want to give anybody that much money?
Well, I mean, somebody's going to win each night anyway, right? I guess the theory is, and again, it's not necessarily my theory, but the theory is that by creating sort of another Jeopardy superhero, that you have people talking about Jeopardy and talking about something else other than the hosting controversy.
Okay, and then your stepmother, if she was right, then how would that affect the show if she was right?
Well, I mean, it would affect it, I guess, by more people watching it to see whether Matamodio was going to win that day or not. How long will this streak continue kind of a thing.
Did you enjoy the streak?
I actually didn't. I thought it was a little anticlimactic because it was pretty clear he was going to win every day.
Yeah, my friend stopped listening and watching, rather. He said, no, there's nothing to watch. He said, he's going to win.
Yeah, so then maybe that's the hole in the theory, Diane.
All right. Well, thank you, Frank.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. Dave is in Dumont. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, Dave. Thanks.
Good. I want to talk about Jeopardy and Matamodio and James Holzhauer. I think James Holzhauer was an exciting contestant to watch. He was, I think, in my opinion, smarter than Matamodio in that Matamodio answered questions very slowly and James Holzhauer was lightning fast, and he won record amounts of money, $130,000 one game one time.
Yep.
$100,000 and $90,000 number of times. He deliberately lost in the 33rd game that he was on. He won 32 straight games, Holzhauer. He deliberately lost the 33rd game because if he won, and bet a lot, which he didn't. If he bet a lot, then he would have broken Ken Jennings' record.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think if he could have broken Ken Jennings' record, he would have. And when they faced off against one another in their primetime super-duper Jeopardy tournament of champions, he couldn't beat Ken Jennings. So I don't agree with that at all. But as far as your theory that Holzhauer was smarter, we'll see when they face off against each other in the tournament of champions. Until next hour, your influence counts, so use it. Everybody, I want to encourage you, if you're just tuning in now or if you didn't get to hear the beginning of the show, please, especially if you're interested in the subject of reincarnation, go back and listen to my discussion with Bruce Leininger, whose son might have been the reincarnated soul of a World War II fighter pilot. So you can go to WABCradio.com or you can just search The Other Side of Midnight on any podcast app, Google Podcast, iTunes, whatever your podcast app of choice is. Hit the subscribe button and you'll automatically get the podcast downloaded to your phone each and every day.
So I think it's I think it was a really interesting interview, and so far a lot of the feedback that I've gotten is pretty positive as well. So please, whether you're interested in reincarnation or not, you want to be able to hear the whole show, even if you have to sleep occasionally. So just please go to The Other Side of Midnight on iTunes or Google Podcasts or elsewhere. Now, it's interesting. I listen to both Sid Rosenberg and Juliette Huddy on a regular basis. They talk about how they've gotten Botox. And I've known a lot of people, mostly women, but some men, Sid included, who have gotten Botox and who get Botox regularly. And they say that it's just really helpful in terms of smoothing out wrinkles and things of that sort. Now, I've never really considered Botox because, look, if you're looking at all the problems with my physical appearance, I think a forehead wrinkle is the last thing that's going to be on anybody's list. Am I right? Let me be 40 pounds lighter and a foot taller first, right? Or maybe not a foot, but 7 inches. So I was, you know, I never really thought about Botox, but I always thought it was not something that was good for you because I'd always heard that Botox was essentially a toxin and a similar kind of toxin that they use in rat poison. But I know a lot of people use it regularly and safely, and they're perfectly healthy, and that's fine. I mean, great. I'm a big believer in not judging people and not for anything, but especially for anything that they choose to do for their appearance. God bless you. But this situation in the UK did pique my interest. And I'm wondering what the situation is like in the United States and if this is something that we should emulate if it's not already in place here. In the United Kingdom, what they have done is they have banned Botox style injections and lip filler for anyone under the age of 18. So as it stands now, under 18-year-olds, minors, are no longer able to get botulinum toxin injections, often known as Botox. That's what Botox is short for, botulinum toxin, or dermal lip fillers for cosmetic reasons. This new law aims to protect young people from harm after years of efforts to regulate the non-surgical beauty industry. Campaigners for this say the rules don't go far enough. The ban does not cover other procedures like thread lifts. Some seek to get the popular fox eye look. Government estimates show up to 41,000 Botox-style procedures were carried out on under 18-year-olds in England last year. Now, that's, I would think, that's an enormous amount. 41,000 young people getting Botox? And the analysis by the Department of Health and Social Care suggests that there were up to 29,300 dermal filler procedures for under 18-year-olds. Laura Brooks is 34 years old and decided to get dermal lip fillers in December of 2020 to make her lips look fuller. But the procedure went almost instantly wrong, and she's still dealing with some of the fallout months later. Laura says she chose to have the procedure partly because everyone else was doing it, and also as she found a cut-price deal online. But as the treatment got underway, she could see the practitioner's face and knew something was wrong. I just saw this look on her face of panic, and my heart started racing. I could feel blood just trickling down the side of my face. Laura says she could feel her lip becoming increasingly swollen, and her therapist tried massaging it and putting a cold pack on it. She added, "My practitioner really panicked. She didn't know how to deal with that situation. My lip was massive and black, and the underside was just filled with blood. I didn't know what to do. I wished it wasn't happening." Now, again, I want to stress this was an adult, someone over the age of 18. But Laura quickly contacted a friend who's medically trained, who explained it was likely that a vein had been damaged during the procedure. Some of the swelling's now gone down, but some of the effects are still visible to Laura 9 months later. So she is welcoming the change in the law, but says it's important for more to be put in place to protect everybody. She says there are women of all ages and men, I guess, having these treatments. It's not just the age thing. You should be medically trained. So before this new legislation came into place in England, under 18-year-olds were able to have Botox-style procedures and dermal fillers with no checks on their age. Updates on legislation in Wales and Scotland are expected in the near future, while Northern Ireland has no current plans to make any changes. There remains no law in the UK requiring practitioners to have formal qualifications or training for this type of treatment. Now, that's wild. I had no idea that you didn't have to have any training, at least in England, to do this kind of procedure. So I guess my question is this law wise? Is it wise to prohibit minors, people under the age of 18, from getting lip filler and Botox? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. I'd especially be interested in hearing from people that have gotten Botox. And when Juliet gets here, I'm going to pick her brain on this too, because she's been, you know, very open about, you know, having had Botox. And Sid has as well. So if Sid gets here before 5, I'm going to ask his opinion on this. But this happens in the United States as well. Although Botox is approved for adults 18 and older in the United States, there is no law, at least no national law, prohibiting children under 18 from getting injections. So more girls as young as 13 are getting Botox. Now, there are some state restrictions. In New Jersey, for instance, under 18-year-olds are not able to get Botox injections without a doctor's note to prove it's medically necessary. So my question for you is this wise? Should minors, children, be prohibited from getting Botox? My thinking is they should be, is that minors should not be able to get Botox. Change my mind. I know, and I try to see all sides of every issue. I know a lot of times minors are bullied. A lot of times, women especially, in this, we've chronicled this as we've done our stories on Facebook and Instagram and the dangerous social consequences there. There's so much pressure on young women, especially 14, 15, 16 years old, to look good, to look like models, to comport to society's vision of what a young woman should look like. And maybe if your face is not up to what society says it should be, maybe you feel you need to get Botox. I think the benefits of putting this toxin in your face, which I think the only place it goes, are far, far less than the potential hazards of putting a toxin into a 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old girl. What do you think? 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Some states, as I understand it, only allow you, teenage girls or anybody, I guess, to get Botox if their parents consent. So this has become increasingly popular among teenage girls. And they say in a given year, there are about 7,000 Botox procedures performed on teenagers in this country, and maybe even a little more, because this article that I'm reading is a few years old. And because it's one of the less invasive and less expensive procedures, more and more women have turned to Botox as a temporary wrinkle treatment. But imagine, while getting a pedicure at a nail salon, if you overheard a mother and her 18-year-old, or let's make it a 17-year-old daughter, quarrel about Botox, and it was the teen who expressed the desire to erase her wrinkles. What would you do? What would you say? I'll tell you, I can't imagine any scenario if I had a daughter that I would let her get a Botox injection. What say you? 800-848-9222 if you want to jump on board. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We're going to do the $1,000 minute at 4:30. We're going to give Pete and Coney Island another opportunity because there was some controversy in my asking of the question yesterday. So we're going to give Pete another opportunity to see if he has what it takes to win $1,000. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do so at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. And you can email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. We're taking you until 5 a.m. this morning with the WABC Early News, where you will get all the news you need to know in just an hour. It's all the news you're talking about. And it is whether you're getting Botox or going to the water cooler, if you want to be informed about the stories you'll be hearing about all day, you really should start your day with the WABC Early News, or continue your day. If you're in the middle of your day right now or towards the end of your day and you're driving home from work, just listen a little longer because there's a lot of great ground that's covered in the WABC Early News. Eight open lines if you want to comment on the Botox for Minors situation. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. You know, I want to thank our, I don't know what her title is, Director of Human Resources, Candace, a wonderful, wonderful woman who really goes out of her way for the employees a lot of the time. Let me tell you what's going on Thursday. We here at WABC are doing this whole day celebrating police. We're calling it a Back the Blue Day. So on Thursday, we're going to do a tribute to not just the NYPD, but the police everywhere. And we have a whole day's worth of programming devoted to the police. So they asked me if I would host a police roundtable Thursday morning at 11 o'clock. Not only on radio, I think 11 or – not sure if it's 11 or 11:30. I think the time is to be determined. But in around that area, 11:30 or somewhere around there. And, of course, I'm honored. I'm a big supporter of the police, and I'm certainly interested in being a part of a big WABC event like this. And I certainly, with all the additional eyeballs that are available at 11:30 a.m., I'm happy to be a part of it and thankful to be asked, thankful that they thought of me. But that is the time that I usually sleep, around 11 o'clock, 11:30. So the station was so nice, they said, I'll tell you what, Frank, this way you can not only sleep, but shower and get ready. We're going to get you a hotel room. I said, wow, that's really nice. So, I mean, the way I guess it would go is I'd go to the hotel from 6:15 to, I don't know, 10:45, sleep, take a quick shower, shave, maybe change, and then come back here to do the Back the Blue event. But when they called me yesterday to make the arrangements for the hotel, they said, you know, you're probably going to have to check in earlier than 10 p.m. so that, you know, because that's the rules. The hotel asks you to check in earlier. And now I usually get here around 11 o'clock to begin with. So I didn't really want to get in here an hour earlier to on a day where I was going to stay late. So I said, you know, I appreciate the offer, but I'm going to pass. I don't want to come in an hour earlier. I'll still do the event, but I'll crash on the couch or something. Thank you. And I was all prepared to do that. Wouldn't you know, Candace says, all right, Frank, I'm going to check in for you, and I'll leave you the keys so that you don't have to come in earlier. Now, that was really nice, and she really went out of her way in order to do that. So I'm really excited about this Back the Blue thing. I'm even more excited by the fact that I don't have to come in an hour earlier than I normally do on Thursday. 800-848-WABC. Should minors be able to get Botox? Let me ask Jim in New Hampshire. Hello, Jim.
Frank, let me first say I've never had Botox because, just like you, I think I'm beautiful the way I am.
Well, I didn't say I think I'm beautiful. I'm just sure. I don't think whatever deficiencies I have are going to be helped by Botox.
Me too. Okay. We're on the same track then. But minors getting Botox, no, I don't think they should be allowed to by their parents. I don't want more laws. Every time that I see somebody trying to fix a problem with a law, it turns into another bureaucracy or another state telling me what to do. So why don't parents just say, no, you can't get Botox?
Well, I agree with you, right? But let's say you have a situation where it's a state where parental consent is not required, and a 16 or 17-year-old just goes and does it. I mean, almost like tattoos, right? There are a lot of 16 and there are states, I think, where you can get a tattoo without parental consent, even if you're a minor. Should a 17, a 16, a 15-year-old girl, I'm saying girl because that's the more common thing, apparently, should that person be able to legally go and get Botox on their own?
No, but, well, legally, well, first of all, it should be up to the states. Certainly no federal law. That's ridiculous. But the answer is no, but the alternative is passing a law, which I think is worse, because who's going to enforce the law? You're going to have police going in and arresting people, or you're going to have fines in the courts, and just whatever happened to parents saying...
Well, I agree with you, Jim, in that respect, right? But I think you'd see very few responsible cosmetic physicians or cosmetic surgeons go forward with treatment like that if it were prohibited by law. But your point's well taken, Jim. I think it should be a parental thing and probably a state-by-state thing as well. I think we're on the same page largely. And again, as I said, if I had a daughter, I would never allow her to get Botox before the age of 18. What say you? 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Should Botox be prohibited for people under the age of 18 in this country as it is in the UK? What say you? Why or why not? Let me say hello to Joe on the Jersey Turnpike. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Frank. Great. Great talking to you. But, Frank, I agree with you. I'm hoping not to sidetrack it. I'm hoping that something as smart as like a contraceptive would still be available to minors, because I still think if they're going to do it anyway, hopefully they're making a great, you know, great intelligent choice.
Absolutely.
I think that, you know, Botox, I mean, the pressure, I've been blessed with four girls, and the pressure that's on women today, on youth today is incredible, especially girls. They go through so much. And I'm hoping, God bless you with the baby. I hope you don't have to experience stuff like that. But I'm just saying, after 18, I'm hoping that they seen enough of life that they can make a more intelligent choice and make a better choice in their life. That's all. That's it, Frank.
Well said, Joe. Thank you very much. If you want to disagree, you can do so. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222 if you want to comment. I'd especially love to hear from people that have had Botox and are pro-Botox. I guess that you'd be pro-tox if you're pro-Botox, and whether you think minors should be able to get either Botox or lip filler. No longer allowed in the UK. Is this something that the United States should adopt as well? All right, 800-848-9222. We're going to do the $1,000 minute coming up in just a minute. And if Pete in Coney Island, now we've emailed Pete in Coney Island, but we don't have his phone number. So if Pete in Coney Island is listening, call back. And we'll give you an opportunity to play the game again. If Pete in Long Island, in Coney Island, is not available, then we'll give somebody else an opportunity to call in and play the game. So, Pete, if you're listening, 800-848-WABC. Everybody that's not Pete in Coney Island, it was Pete in Coney Island, right? Yeah. If anybody that's not Pete in Coney Island, wait a few minutes, and then we'll give you an opportunity to call in and play the game if there's no Pete. But where this is calling all Petes. Look all over Coney Island, Surf Avenue, Stillwell Avenue, check Nathan's, check the parking lot near Gargiulo's, check Totono's. We know he likes to hang out there. Check in front of the ballpark. Check in front of the Abe Stark rink. Check all the Coney Island spots, even Ruby's on the boardwalk. Check it all. We're looking for Pete. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
77 WABC, where the action is.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is horrible. This is Brian Adams. I mean, it's not horrible, but it's horrible for this show. Everything I do for you. Brian Adams, it's a great song, but it's a great song if you're like a 45-year-old housewife. I mean, nothing against 45-year-old housewives, but Matt, I mean, the show, the songs on this show, you know, we like songs that are upbeat. We like songs that are up-tempo, songs that are dramatic, songs that you could bounce your finger to, or songs that are mysterious, or songs that fit with a theme, like it being late at night, or aliens, or something. What is this? What was that?
I just liked this one.
You like that one?
Yeah.
Oh boy, jeez. Oh boy.
This was a pick for me.
Yeah. Oh no. Trust me. I know that wasn't Pete and Molly. Believe me. All right. Speaking of Pete's, we have found Pete, and that means it is time for us to play.
The Other Side of Midnight presents.
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
We want to welcome back Pete from Coney Island. Let me explain if people missed yesterday. Pete was on the show yesterday, and apparently I omitted a very key part of the question. And so I did repeat it with the proper term in there, but I don't want any controversy. So we figured we'd give Pete another opportunity to play. Pete, I'm sorry about that. I hope I didn't throw you off too much.
Not at all, Frank. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure thing. All right. So you're a pro by now. You're the James Holzhauer of the $1,000 Minute. You know the rules better than anybody. 10 questions in 60 seconds. And if you get a question right, I'm just going to move on to the next question. If you get a question incorrect, the game's over. You have 60 seconds to do it. Now, we had one suggestion from a listener that I thought was very good. I think this is from Ed, who said we should not start the clock until after I finish the first question. So that's what we're going to do. Ready to go, Pete?
Sure.
All right. Name a bridge that's named for someone.
Mario Cuomo.
Who is the mayor of New York City?
Bill de Blasio.
Name a bad guy in Star Wars.
Darth Vader.
What WABC talk show host is currently an anchor on Fox and Friends?
Oh.
I just mentioned him a little while ago.
I'm going to say no, I don't know.
All right. It was Brian Kilmeade. You could watch him every morning on Fox and Friends, and then listen to him every morning at 10 a.m. on WABC. Pete, thank you for playing. I appreciate you being a sport. And we already have Pete on our list for a hat, right? So we can just thank Pete for being available to us for a second night in a row. But he was doing well there. 2 days in a row, he got up to that fourth question, or yesterday it was even farther. He got up to the fifth question. We'll play again tomorrow. And if you want to get a WABC cap, which is generally what we give our contestants who lose, you can purchase one by going to WABCRadioStore.com. That's WABCRadioStore.com, and they're adding new merchandise there all the time. Speaking of the radio station, there it is time now for the 77 WABC clip of the day. This clip is from the Bernie and Sid show, in which Sid Rosenberg talks about how smart Donald Trump was.
There was nobody harsher on the Russians than President Trump. Nobody.
Nobody.
The pipeline. Who okayed the Russian pipeline? Joe Biden.
Yeah, not Donald Trump.
Who got $3 million from the wife of the mayor of Moscow?
Hunter Biden.
Thank you.
I mean, the only thing Trump did, and I thought it was smart, Trump obviously comes from the old school of keep your enemies closer than your friends. So
exactly.
He would every once in a while compliment Putin on his leadership abilities. But what he really was doing was kind of giving him the big middle finger.
Exactly.
But people don't pick up on those nuances. He was smart.
Well, you know, I actually part company a little bit from both Bernie and Sid on this. I actually, one of the reasons I supported, and it's a great show. You can listen to Bernie and Sid every day from 6 to 10 a.m. They have great guests. They have great energy between the two of them. And they cover a lot of subjects other than politics, which is what I like in my talk radio. I like a wide variety of subjects, and especially in the morning. And they certainly give you that. But one of the reasons I decided to vote for Donald Trump in 2016 was because I'm of the belief that we need a better relationship with Russia. And Trump said all the right things in the campaign about a better relationship with Russia. And it was one of the reasons that I voted for him. But unfortunately, a lot of the policies that he implemented once he became president were the opposite of that. He took a very harsher line with Russia. He gave lethal aid to Ukraine while they were fighting Russian-backed separatists. He would not okay that pipeline. In fact, he publicly embarrassed Germany for wanting to buy energy from Russia. He expelled Russian diplomats. He instituted sanctions on Russia. He pulled out of allowed to lapse a key treaty that we had with Russia. I believe it was not New START, but it was another one. The name escapes me. I don't have it in front of me. And he appointed a lot of people that were very hawkish to his national security team, especially with respect to Russia, people like John Bolton, people like H.R. McMaster. So I count the policies that he had towards Russia as a demerit in Trump's book, in my view. And that was something that I had a lot of hopes for. But it didn't turn out that way, at least not as I had hoped. All right. 800-848-92. I think, by the way, and I don't want to relitigate this whole thing, but I think part of the reason for that, and I've had so many interviews with Professor Stephen Cohen, God rest his soul, on this subject. One of the reasons for that was because with the Russia gate hysteria, which there was really no truth to, the Congress and Robert Mueller investigating Trump for all these ties to Russia, Trump felt that he needed to prove, no, I'm not a Russian agent. I'm not a Russian agent. I'm going to be tough on Russia. I'll show all these people that think I'm in bed with Putin that I'm not by instituting policies that are tougher. In some way, and I remember Stephen Cohen said this to me at the time, the perpetuators of Russiagate in some ways represented the greatest threat to national security because they forced Trump to have a more hardline stance when it came to Russia. And I think that was not a point in his favor, to be honest. But again, I recognize where it was coming from. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Pedro in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Pedro.
Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
If or when Trump runs again, what kind of people, for example, might be in his cabinet the second time around?
You know, I really don't know. It would be a total guess on my part. I do think President Trump's likely to run again. I think this time around, I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to run if social media still has him banned. If Twitter and Facebook still has him banned, then that was such an important part of his messaging apparatus that I think it's going to be tough for him. Now, he's going to be the Republican nominee no matter what. He's still so popular among Republicans. Then the question becomes, does Biden run for re-election again, and do Biden's struggles, whether it's the border, whether it's violent crime in the cities, whether it's inflation, whether it's the foreign policy disaster in places like Afghanistan, do they continue to get worse, or do things turn around for Biden? If things get worse, then even with no social media, Trump might be able to win. I don't know, Pedro, honestly. It's I think that and thanks for the call. I couldn't hazard a guess. I think one of the more disappointing aspects of the early Trump administration was that there were no Trump people in it. And again, I try to avoid discussing Trump on this show because people get so crazed one way or another. But Trump loaded his administration in the beginning, with the exception of Peter Navarro and Jeff Sessions, who had his own problems. He loaded his administration with people that would be just as fitting in either a Jeb Bush or a Hillary Clinton administration. I mean, you go up and down the line, General Mattis, General Kelly, Steve Mnuchin. Who would really not be in place in a Hillary Clinton or a Jeb Bush administration? Just about all of them would. So that was one of the great disappointments. And I think Trump learned as things went on that he needed better people. And towards the end of his first term, he did start to show some of those changes. But that's why I've always said that I think Trump would have been a much better president in his second term than he was in his first, because he learned you can't just take the establishment Republicans' word for it, that this is a good person to have. As far as Secretary of Defense, I would love to see Trump appoint a guy that we've had on this show, a guy I think is the brightest mind when it comes to national defense that there is, Colonel Douglas MacGregor. I would absolutely love to see him appoint Colonel Douglas MacGregor as Secretary of Defense. As far as Secretary of State goes, I'd love to see him appoint Tulsi Gabbard. I think she gets it. She gets it when it comes to Russia. She gets it when it comes to Syria and the Middle East. Now, would she serve in a Trump administration, being a Democrat who once endorsed Bernie Sanders for president? I don't know. But that's who I'd ask. But look, as my grandmother would say, you should only have such a problem, right? 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Eugene in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Eugene.
Good morning, Frank. It's a pleasure to hear you again.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask the question, what is Eric Adams' background? He says he's running for mayor. What is his educational background? I think that sort of qualifies those running for mayor. They should have some kind of educational qualifications if they're going to take on the whole city.
Well, if we're going to pick a mayor based on educational background, then my guy is not getting out of the gate, because my guy not only never went to college, but he never graduated high school. But as far as Eric Adams goes, he did graduate high school. He graduated Bayside High School in Queens. Mm-hmm. Then he started attending college while working as a clerk in the Brooklyn DA's office, and he got an associate's degree from the New York City College of Technology, and then he got a B.A., from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and then an MPA, a master's in public administration from Marist College. So he's got a master's degree from Marist, a BA from John Jay, and an associate's from the New York City College of Technology.
Well, that's great. That's good. I think that I would say that's a basic qualification, at least. I mean, that shouldn't be the only thing decided upon, but that's a good basis. That's a good starter, at least.
Yeah, again,
another party.
Yeah, you may be right, Eugene. Look, when it comes to what makes a candidate for any office, people have a funny way of deciding for themselves what's important. I think that the life experience of a candidate can potentially be much more important than their standard academic background. I had this on my list for today, but I didn't get to it. One of the things that Justice Sotomayor said that I agreed with recently, and I've been saying it for years, long before she said it, is that it would be nice if there was some diversity on the Supreme Court. What does that mean? Well, I don't mean more blacks, more Hispanics, more gays, more Asians, things like that. No. I think it would be nice if there was some diversity of experience. Now, there are 9 justices on the Supreme Court right now. Eight of them went to the same two schools. Eight of them. Okay. Eight of them had the same job before they were appointed to the Supreme Court. Now, how crazy is that? Wouldn't it be nice if you had some real educational diversity? You had somebody that was once a state judge or a defense attorney, right? I'm not even talking about appointing a non-lawyer, which the president can do. But I'm just talking about somebody that has some that's lived outside that standard bubble. And I realize it's a different discussion when it comes to the mayor's race, but the point is still the same. The experiences that somebody like Curtis Sliwa has had on the radio as a crime fighter, running a nonprofit group, working on campaigns for other people, being a spokesman, being on television, interviewing people, being interviewed by people, giving speeches all over the world, that counts for something. And I think in some cases that can be matter more than a degree from XYZ College. Because you're going to see in the debate today, and again, I said I wasn't going to talk about the mayor's race, but the caller brought it up. You're going to see in the debate today that Curtis can talk public policy on issues of consequence in this city with anybody. And even though Eric Adams has a master's degree and he's been in government a long time, served as borough president and in the state legislature, I have a feeling Curtis is going to know the issues as well or better than Eric Adams will. But we'll see tonight, I suppose, right? I am looking forward to seeing that debate, but I do have to move my sister-in-law to Toms River, New Jersey. So hopefully I'm going to reach out to the Kyles and they'll have somebody out there that can help me out. You know, it's funny. I had a wild day of sleeping yesterday. For whatever reason, when I finished the show yesterday, I was just totally wiped out yesterday. And again, it's a very high energy show that we do, a lot of energy to prepare and a lot of energy to do things. And sometimes after you finish the show, especially the 5 a.m. hour, it feels like you've just run a marathon, especially the 5 a.m. hour. Now we keep tweaking the format a little bit. So there's a lot of energy and it's very tense in that 5 a.m. hour, just knowing the proper format. So I was just exhausted, mentally, physically, spiritually exhausted at the end of yesterday's shows. So I got home yesterday and I got home maybe around 7:30. And then if you have your druthers, right, if I have my druthers, I like to try and sleep if I can push it. If I have nothing scheduled in the afternoon, I like to push it until 3 o'clock. Now, yesterday, my wife had a bassinet she wanted me to put together. She has me putting together one major item a day, which is a good pace for me. So I said, let me try and sleep till 3. So I woke up a couple times, woke up once around noon, I think, to go to the bathroom, woke up again around 2:30. I said, it's only 2:30. I wonder if I can try and fall asleep again. So I go back to sleep. Wouldn't you know it? I didn't wake up until about 20 minutes until 5 o'clock. Now, if you think about it, that's like 9 hours of sleep. I don't remember the last time I've gotten 9 hours of sleep, albeit not consecutive. That was broken up a little bit. But point is, my wife, in fact, when I woke up, she said, "Are you feeling okay?" That's usually the kind of amount of sleep you get if you're really sick. And I don't think I was sick. I was just tired. But I don't know what the sleep cycle has in store for me today. But I'm hoping I can get a good few hours of sleep, not sleep until 4:30, put together that bassinet, have a couple hours to work on the show, load up this couch, drive to Toms River, drive back to my neighborhood, watch the debate. And then there's that. All right. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Xavier in New Jersey. Hello, Xavier.
Good morning, Frank. How are you? First of all, on the contest, I don't think you were wrong not mentioning Babe Ruth, because if you know baseball, one, automatically, when you mention icon, you would know Boston Red Sox. Okay. And I think now that you're changing the timing after you asked the question, I don't think it's fair to the people who lost already.
Well, that's a good point, Xavier. That's a good point. You know what it is? It's at this point, nobody's come close to winning. And I've tried to do whatever I can. I've tried to make the questions easier. And I'm thinking maybe that will help us get a winner. But so far, at least in Pete's case, it hasn't. But your point's well taken, Xavier. Let me think about where we go from here, because that's a
Frank,
fair point.
I have to ask you something before you go.
Sure.
Okay. Back on May 26th, I stumped you with two questions from The Godfather, and I won the hat. I have spoken to Gabby twice, Molly twice. I even emailed you, and as of yet, no hat, Frank.
So I don't know. So is Xavier in your email?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember getting your email. But Molly, do you have? I'm going to put you on hold with Molly. We'll see if she has any explanation.
I spoke to Molly. I spoke to Molly. I think about 2 weeks ago, and she says, "Don't worry about it. We'll send it out to you." We're a little behind. So I said, "Fine." Still haven't gotten it, Frank.
All right. Well, I'm going to have Molly give this her personal attention and talk with Renee. We have a new person in charge of promotions, Renee, and she's very good with that stuff. So hang on, Xavier. So, Molly, pick up line three and make sure we have all of Xavier's information. And if you can, please alert Renee to the alacrity with which we need to deal with Xavier's hat. We'll put him number one in the queue because that's not right. If he's been waiting for 5 months, we got to make sure we take care of that right away. You know, there's been some changes in the promotions department and even on our staff. So hopefully that's not something that got lost through the cracks, but we'll make sure that Xavier gets a hat. All right. We're going to do 15 seconds of fame in just a minute. If you want to be heard for 15 seconds, you can do so. 800-848-9222. Two open lines if you want to jump on board. But first, I want to talk to you about Life Change Tea. Perhaps the reason that I slept so long yesterday is because I have significantly reduced my caffeine intake. In fact, I don't think I'm drinking any or consuming any caffeine, really. And the reason I'm not consuming any caffeine these days is because I am drinking Life Change Tea. Two big glasses of this every day gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. It also is a gentle daily cleanse of what's inside your body. It gets what's in your body out. It works to get things moving. Let's face it, stress can wreak havoc on your digestive tract. And if you are feeling bloated and clogged up, that's never a good thing. And that's where Life Change Tea comes in. It's all natural. It's non-GMO. One package will last you a whole month. It's only available if you go to the website getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And if you use the promo code Frank when you order, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. That's getthetea.com. Promo code Frank. We'll do 15 seconds of fame next. If you want to be heard for 15 seconds, give us a call, 800-848-9222. Straight ahead.
You're hearing things on 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. It is now your time to be heard for at least 15 seconds. If you have a comment that's 15 seconds or less, give us a call, 1-800-848-9222, because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Let's say hello to Jay in the Poconos. Hello, Jay.
Hey, good morning, Frank. I love your show. So about the qualifications for the mayor, I would take somebody with common sense and real-life experience over somebody with a college degree. I'm a truck driver, and one of the reasons they can't get truck drivers.
Hear, hear, Jay. Only 15 seconds. Call back tomorrow. We'll chat for longer. Mike is on Staten Island. Mike.
Best 2021, Curtis Tobacco. Best 2024, Trump DeSantis. Best bacon, egg, and cheeseburger, Dino and Sons, Woodside.
Joe in Orange County.
Frank, congratulations. I didn't know your wife was pregnant, but you got to put all that stuff together. That's your job, my man. Not only that, but I'm impressed. At least it works, Frank. You know it works now. I had doubts.
Thank you. Ray in Queens.
You know what I did yesterday? I went in front of all the skippers, Sonny Red, all of them. I went on the record with you. You know what that means? Nobody could touch you now. I'm your man. Jesus Christ couldn't touch you. So keep your nose clean, be a good earner, and someday when they open the books, you get straightened out. Become a wise guy.
Thank you, Lefty. Troy, hello.
Yeah, go buy some AMC stock. Go to youtube.com/Wall Street Growth and check out my video and get some AMC stock. You'll be rich. It's for you, Kenny. Watch out for the moas.
800-848-9222. Pete is in the village.
This is a moron.
800-848-WABC. Neil is on Staten Island.
You know, Frank, instead of that moron Biden begging Russia and OPEC to produce more oil, why don't we start drilling our own oil? We have it here, and put Americans back to work.
800-848-9222. Irishman is in the Bronx.
James O'Keefe of Project Veritas needs our help. He's suing the New York Times, and their headquarters are flooded. Please go to projectveritas.com to donate. It's a 501c3 organization, projectveritas.com.
800-848-WABC. Jackson is in Queens.
Frank, why the hell did they wake me up from my beauty sleep? You know, Donald Trump would never accept the fact that Thomas Jefferson's statue was removed from City Hall. Or they removed the Rocky Balboa statue from Philadelphia City Hall.
Evelyn is in Bayonne.
Frank, how you do it, I have no idea. I get tired just listening to how much you fit into one day. God bless you. That's all I have, Frank.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. Ina is in Manhattan. Hello.
Hello, Frank. How are you? Curtis all the way. You have the right man. And I like how you describe him. He knows the city. He knows everything. I picked Curtis over and what it with the degree. And it.
Thank you, Ina. And finally, Raji is in Manhattan. Hello.
Mr. Katzmatidis, please intervene to preserve the otherwise good reputation of the WABC by stopping any host from promoting gambling and hence addicting our children and bankrupting parents. Thank you.
Thank you, Raji. 800-848-WABC. You call back tomorrow if you didn't get a chance to be heard today. All right. Coming up in just a minute, we're going to talk to you. We're going to bring you the WABC early news. Juliet Hedy and I have a whole bunch of news that is that's coming your way. And if you want, and tomorrow we've got an interesting show for you. Tomorrow we'll have the post analysis of the debate. We'll do the AC report. My friend Bruce Charrett is going to be here. He's got some great old-fashioned showbiz stories. He's at least scheduled to be here. And I have some surprises up my sleeve as well. So come back and make sure you listen to us tomorrow. If you missed any portion of the show, please listen to the podcast. You can listen at WABCradio.com, or you can just subscribe to the podcast wherever they're available. Just search The Other Side of Midnight on iTunes, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Just search The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Moreno. Hit the subscribe button, and you'll automatically get the show downloaded to your iPod or to your phone each and every morning. You want to email me? You can do so, frank.moreno@wabcradio.com. That's frank.moreno. at WABCRadio.com. And you could find me on Twitter at Frank Morano and on Facebook at Facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's Facebook.com/MoranoFan. And if you are on Facebook, you could join our Facebook group by searching Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. All right. The WABC Early News with Juliette Huddy and me is next. Not just the two of us, but Matt Sapienza's got sports. Joe Nolan has traffic. And you have Joe Nolan doing traffic trends on the 7s. And Sid Rosenberg will join us to give us a preview of what you can expect to hear on the Bernie and Sid show coming up at 6 a.m. The WABC Early News is next to be continued.